is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He gonna come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And welcome to the John Murphy Show. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. Chris Brown in for John Murphy, along with Donald Jones. And Donald, are we surprised that John Murphy is off on St. Patrick's Day? I mean, no. Honest to Pete here.
I mean, I know. He tries to get off like every holiday.
No, actually, he's got a legitimate reason to be off today, but, you know, we're just having fun with
the Michigan basketball
the luck
game?
Of the Irish, shall we say.
I thought that was the Michigan basketball game.
Well, that he'll be watching that. I think that's safe to say today as the NCAA rolls on. We'll get into that a little bit here on the John Murphy Show. But, yeah, good to be with you, man. I mean, good. I know I'm usually sitting over to your left over here on your right. So, you know, I'm out.
Are you comfortable?
I'm flanking you on the other side. I'm fine. I'm good. We got the seat all the way up to the top. I don't have quite the height that John does. So we've got that thing jacked all the way up to 11. But we're okay. We're all set. We're ready to go. We got tons to talk about today.
We do.
Not only Bills news, but, you know, we got the NCAAs. We can't really ignore that. I mean, weekend is always the best weekend for the NCAA, so we'll talk about that too. And
is your bracket still in shape?
My bracket, it's perfect right now. I did not get one wrong.
Wow.
On day one, and you were at the arena, right?
I was there. I was at the night games. Well, I went to 1.5 games.
Yeah, you bailed.
I bailed.
A lot of people bailed. I was there last night too, with a good friend of mine from New York. We flew him up. Went to his first NCAA games, and we had a lot of fun. It was good. The 8-9 game was great, as anticipated, between Wisconsin and Virginia Tech. And I had my brackets with me. I got to admit, I'm a little obsessed with this thing.
With the brackets?
Ever since I was a kid.
I had
a giant whiteboard in my basement growing up. It was probably like 3 feet by 4 feet.
And you drew out the entire bracket?
With, like, dry erase markers.
Wow.
I was a little obsessed.
Yeah, I see. I see. Now, you must do, like, research before you make your
picks. I don't necessarily do research as much as I just watch a ton of games.
Oh, okay.
Like, I watch a lot of games, like Big Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, like ESPN is on.
Wow.
Even if it's in the background and I'm doing other stuff around the house,
right?
You know,
it's on.
So I'm, like, keeping a close ear to it and what's happening. I love watching Kansas. I think Bill Self's a great coach, so I like watching them a lot.
Is that who you have taken it?
When I was a kid, it was St. John's.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, they were a good team. And
they were good.
I really liked them. And so I don't necessarily have an affinity for Syracuse, even though my wife went there for graduate school. So it's a little bit of an issue in the house. But neither of those teams are in the tournament. So it's pretty fair game right now in terms of a level playing field. But I kind of got hooked on the Danny Manning and the Miracles Kansas team when I was about 15, 16 years old. And I've always kind of just followed them. And I think they've got a good shot at it this year. I mean, they play a little bit later today.
They do. They have a good shot.
They don't have a deep bench, but
that can hurt you.
Yeah.
But they are number one seed. Who else is in the bracket with them?
They've got, let's see here. I got it right in front of us. They've got Louisville on the other side as the two.
Right.
So that would be an interesting game.
And
then on the bottom side of the bracket, they got Kentucky and Carolina. And I think a Carolina team is the team that could really sink them, because they got so much height and they can just kill them on the glass. And that's the one thing that Kansas doesn't have, a ton of front court size. But
Carolina's a good team. For me, this entire season, I've said that I felt like Carolina was going to win it. But they just lose some games that really make you scratch your head sometimes.
Yep.
And it's like, what just happened? You know?
And Berry is the whole thing for them, that point guard. If he's not in the game, they have trouble. They struggle to run their offense. But, you know, I think it's going to be a fun tournament. I don't think there's going to be a ton of lower seed upsets.
No.
There could be some today. There was really only one yesterday, the Middle Tennessee State
that
game.
That messed me up.
There's always a 5-12.
And I know Middle Tennessee was the favorite in that game by like 1 point or something like that. But I just felt like Minnesota was going to pull it out, and I was wrong.
Yeah.
So
it was a lot of fun downtown. The atmosphere downtown here in Buffalo was great yesterday.
Might be turned up a little bit today.
The KeyBank Center in the Metro Atlantic – athletic conference teams, Niagara and Canisius, always do a good job of hosting, which is why the NCAA always comes back here about every 4 years to do first and second round games. So they do a good job down there, and it's a lot of fun if you're into that college hoops atmosphere. I mean, it is the pinnacle here at the end of the year. So it's good stuff. We'll talk about that a little bit. And, you know, we welcome your phone calls at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. If you have a bracket horror story, we know everybody's got a bracket, and everybody's bracket has been crushed one year or another. If yours has been crushed already, let us know. If you have some horrible story about how you were in the money, so to speak, until the very last game and some horrible call happened and you got jobbed out of some, out of some winnings, I want to hear it because I've got my share of those.
Really?
Who is your final four, by the way?
My final four or final two?
Do you know your final four, like who you have?
Yeah, so I had UCLA. I have Villanova in it. I can't remember. I have to bring it up.
Okay.
I have to bring it up.
I've got pretty much one seeds, and the only two seed I have is Arizona.
I think I had all one seed. Well, like 3-1 seeds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've got 3-1s in Arizona. So the only one I have getting knocked out is Villanova.
Right. So I had actually Villanova.
Oh, no. It would be Gonzaga getting knocked out.
I had Villanova. I had Gonzaga actually making it all the way. I had Kansas and UCLA.
All right. Well, you know, I think it's going to be interesting when we get down to the nitty-gritty, but I think one thing that a lot of people overlook, where these games are played.
Yeah.
Because in one of my brackets, I have Arizona winning the whole thing, partly because the Final Four is in Phoenix. It's going to be home games.
The home
games.
Like,
I mean, I know their campus is in Tucson, but that's going to be like a home game.
Yeah, it's a home
for
game for them.
So could be the edge that they need. So if you want to chime in with some bracket buster nightmares that you've had over the years, feel free to submit them. We're taking those here on an NCAA kind of weekend. There is also Bills news, oh, by the way, the biggest of which right now is, you know, Ryan Groy. The Bills matched the offer sheet that the Rams signed him to earlier in the week. So I think it's really good news. Valuable depth, maybe the most valuable depth player on the offensive line for the Bills just because of his versatility.
His
what do you think?
I think when you look at it and Coach McDermott, he likes to have versatile guys. You know, he said that in his press conference. Everybody who he brings on his team, he wants them to be able to do multiple things. I think when you look at Ryan Groy, he's a guy who can step in at the tackle position, at the guard, and at the center position. So there's value to that, right? And then if you look at, you know, Eric Wood and Richie Incognito's contracts, it should be up in the next year or two.
Yeah.
You know, so now you have a guy at a price, he could end up your starter for, you know, not a starter price.
Right. At least for a year anyway, right?
Right, at least for a year. And I think as a team it just makes sense, you know, economically.
Yeah, so he's a guy that obviously played the last seven games at center, and he impressed me.
He did
quite well, and we'll have Ryan on the show here a little bit later. We'll talk to him, see where he's at, where his head is at, now that he knows he's going to be here in Buffalo for the next couple of seasons. I'm curious to find out if he had this even on the radar as a possible development. I mean, it's always a possibility as a restricted free agent, obviously, especially when you're met with the low tender. Other teams could jump into the mix.
Yep.
I'm just kind of wondering what his initial thoughts were going in and what he's thinking now after a crazy 2 or 3 days for him.
I mean, like, you get the tender, and you're like, all right, this is what they gave me. Obviously, as a player, you want to have as a player, you want to have a higher tender. You want to make more money. You think that they value you a lot higher.
Yeah.
And then they give you that tender, and then now you're like, okay, I'm going to be in Buffalo for the next year, and then hopefully I'll play good enough and end up back in Buffalo or somewhere else. And then all of a sudden, a team swoops in and they're like, we're gonna offer you this, and the Bills have to match
you're
it.
Like,
and now
you're that
like,
sounds
uh-oh.
Good,
right? You know, and it's like, uh oh, now what's going to happen? You know, so it's just a lot. It's like mental gymnastics right there, you know, and it's tough. It's tough for a player because you have no clue what's going to happen until I think the deadline was Sunday for the Bills.
Yeah, it was a 5-day match window. So, yeah, they had till the end of the week and, you know, they got it done and that's good. You know, you wonder if some of the free agents that they were pursuing that did not come through, like Andre Smith, for example,
yes.
That was a guy they were trying very hard to sign for line depth on the edges, potentially a starter in Andre Smith based on how competition may or may not have played out. He elects to go back to the team that originally drafted him in Cincinnati. So he goes from Minnesota to Cincinnati. You know, you wonder if the dollars they were prepared to commit to Andre Smith that did not need to be utilized
facilitated
them being able to match the deal for Ryan Groy. I'm not saying it's all apples to apples, but right. we are talking about two offensive linemen here. Granted, they're probably playing two different positions in terms of their primary job description, but you wonder if those allocated dollars now being freed up facilitated them getting this done.
Yeah, I think you also have to take into account that, you know, with them now matching, you still don't have your right tackle in place. So Groy is a guy who you could plug in at that right tackle, at least in camp, let him compete with Jordan Mills.
Yeah, I know you're on that train. You want to?
I am on that train.
You want to see Groy on
the
edge.
I want to see the competition.
It's an interesting conversation. I don't think there's any question about it. I don't think we want to forget about Cyrus Kwanjo, although I think most of us would agree that he seems to play better on the left side than he does on the right.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jordan Mills is a guy that's in the mix here. And what I'm curious to see, maybe more than anything else, with respect to the tackle situation, right tackle in particular, is Juan Castillo and the accolades and credentials this offensive line coach comes to Buffalo with. I'm really interested to see, because the word on him is fantastic teacher, maximizes potential. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, so we've got a player in Jordan Mills who logged 16 starts at right tackle last year. And I think even he would admit he had some ups and he had some downs. I thought Cameron Wake was probably his most difficult assignment last season in the two games he had to match up with him. And, oh, by the way, Cameron Wake has his way with a lot of right tackles in the NFL. I mean, it's no real knock on Mills. But I think he would agree. He had a little bit of an uneven season when you roll the body of work together over the course of 16 games. And just talking to him very briefly, you know, after his press conference here this week, he is determined to raise his game. I think even he knows he expects better of himself in terms of how he played in 2016. And now you couple that motivation with a guy the caliber of Juan Castillo as an offensive line coach, I'm really interested to see where Jordan Mills can take his game. And you look at his contract and what he signed for, and I think to outside observers, they say, okay, you got your starter back from last year, but what you're paying him is making it clear that he's going to probably be in a competition-type situation going into OTAs, mini camp, training camp, et cetera. The question now is, who's going to be the primary competition for him? Because really, Shontrell Henderson, we're expecting a league suspension for him. He's probably not going to be in the mix as it pertains to the first half of the season and who's lining up there on Sunday. Cyrus Kwanjo, we've already discussed, a guy that seems to be better on the left side. Maybe he's best suited to be a swing tackle on this roster. You know, so who does that leave? Maybe it's not filled yet. So it's maybe it's TBD. But I think it's safe to say, based on the contract he got, and the new staff coming in, it's probably going to be one of the more wide-open positions in terms of starting roles on this roster that's going to be up for whoever wants it the most.
Now, Cyrus is supposed to be ready for camp, right, for training camp?
Oh, yeah, right, and that's the other thing, too. he needed hip surgery.
Right.
So, you know, he's a guy that's going to be on the mend and probably won't even be on the field until we get to training camp.
Exactly.
So, really, it's
– So, it's like it's
Jordan Mills,
right now.
I mean, as much as – and I know there are fans that – we're not happy with the way Jordan played last year, he's a pretty nice insurance policy to have. I mean, all things considered, and looking at the draft this year, thin at offensive tackle. So, for me, you could do a whole lot worse than Jordan Mills.
Yeah,
honest to God, you could.
You can. So, I mean, they could have their starter. Like you said, it could still be to be determined. I think when you look at it, it should be an open competition. For me, a competition just brings out the best. You know, so Jordan Mills, he's going to learn a lot here in mini camps from Juan Castillo.
Right.
He's going to learn a lot in camp. But at the end of the day, you have to compete for this job. You know, this is the money, the contract that you got. It's clear that there's going to be an open competition between you and whoever else is there. If Cyrus is ready to go for camp and anybody else that they bring in, you know, if it's a free agent or a draft pick, undrafted free agent, there's going to be a competition there between, I would think, two or three guys, you know. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think that's going to be something we talk about all throughout camp.
And circling back to Groy, I don't think we can dismiss the potential of Groy pushing one of the starters
right
at either guard position potentially or even Eric Wood at center. you know, Eric's coming off a broken leg, so he's probably lost at least a little bit of time in the offseason. You know, knowing his work ethic, he'll probably be up to speed when OTAs roll around. But knowing the business of football and how it operates, I think we at least have to have an open mind to the fact that Groy could very well be pushing one of those three guys in the middle for their starting role. I think there's a lot of faith in what John Miller can do. Yes. Had a great second year, really made a nice jump from year one to year two as a starter. Part of that, I think, was due in part to the fact that he was as healthy as he ever was. His rookie year, he had two bad ankles and a shoulder deal, and he was playing through it, but you could tell his movement skills were impacted by those. I thought he was lights out last year. As far as second-year starters go, I thought he played really well in there. I mean, was he perfect? No, but I think for a second-year player,
he did a good job.
I mean, the previous coaching staff that was here felt that he exceeded expectations, which I think says a lot. You know, Richie's still playing at a Pro Bowl level. You know, Eric probably would have gotten Pro Bowl consideration again this year had he made it all the way through the season. But I think the way Groy came on last year, here's a guy that I think is going to be pushing those three guys and really making the new coaching staff, which comes in with a clean slate. You know, it's not what you did for us last year. It's what's coming here in training camp.
And when you look at it and you talk about the business of football and how it operates, I mean, nationally, out in Seattle, they're talking about possibly trading Richard Sherman.
Yeah.
Right, a guy who's been to back to like multiple Pro Bowls for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though a guy might have been to the Pro Bowl the year before, he might be who he is as a player and in the community and all that stuff. Ultimately, it comes down to the dollars and cents and what they feel moving forward, you know. And with the new staff, this staff might like the way Groy stepped in. And by the way, he's cheaper than Eric Wood right now. So it could make sense for them to say, you know, if – Groy comes into camp and he's playing a lot better than Wood is playing, that could be a move that you see come down, and it just comes down to the numbers.
Right, and the contract stuff that's coming up too, because Wood's done after the 17th season. His contract is up, and, you know, he'll be a 31-year-old center. You know, how much money do you want to devote to that guy? He's obviously a valuable locker room leader.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's kind of one of those quote-unquote glue players.
Yes.
For this roster. That has value, particularly to Coach McDermott.
Yes.
Based on everything we've heard from him since he's walked in the door as the head coach, you want to establish a culture. Wood is one of those glue guys that can help you do that and promote that message in the locker room and always does everything the right way. You know, I mean, the guy is to the letter.
Yeah.
The type of company person that you want, that you don't have to worry about when you put him out on the field on Sunday. You know what you're going to get each and every week. But again, we go back to the business side. Contract up after 17. What are we doing there?
Right.
Does he want, you know, big money still? You know, what do you think about how he comes through this season physically? There could be a whole host of things that develop there. And then you look at Richie Incognito. Yes, still playing at a Pro Bowl level. How many years does he have left? I think his contract's up in 18.
Mm-hmm.
So having Ryan Groy waiting in the wings, so to speak, even if he can't successfully push for a starting job this year, just having him in the fold, familiar with the system, familiar with the other players around him, this is the kind of roster building that the Bills have to do more of as they move forward with this new coaching staff under Sean McDermott, because that's the kind of roster that leads to the perennial success that this team is after, don't you think? I mean,
I think so. It makes sense, man. Everything that they're doing, they're trying to plan for the future. It's this year, obviously, but they want to make sure that they make the right moves so that they can keep going to the playoffs year after year, you know? So it's not just about, we want to get to the playoffs this year. We need to have the right guys on the roster this year. It's about bringing the right guys in at the right price and making sure that you have guys in the fold waiting to become starters in the next year or two. And I think it's a smart move.
Now, there was a subtraction from Buffalo's free agent list as far as the roster goes. E.J. Manuel signs in Oakland. I don't think anybody really anticipated that E.J. would be back here as one of the quarterbacks on this roster. You know, Tyrod's back, obviously. That huge decision has been made, and they're moving forward with that. Cardale Jones, obviously, still on the roster. E.J., when you look back at his 4 years here, what comes to mind for you in terms of what you're going to remember about that four-year stint that started his NFL career in Buffalo. How would you describe that?
You know, when he was in, he had some injuries, number one. Number two, he wasn't consistent or accurate throwing the ball. It seemed like when he got into games, it was like a deer in headlights sometimes, and it's not to dog EJ or anything like that, but that's the way it seemed. And, you know, it really stinks for him the way he played in that last game. You know, that left, like, the lasting taste in everybody's mouths. Mm-hmm. That last Jets game was like, oh, yeah, we're done. We're done with EJ. He's not going to be back here. So, you know, I didn't get to watch him that much, but the games that I did watch, it was very inconsistent. And that's the biggest thing for me. Throwing the ball, he was just way too inconsistent. Not reading the field properly, not being able to find receivers the right way. And for a first-round pick and the money and all that stuff, it didn't make sense for them to keep him around.
Yeah, and I'm not going to pretend to be an apologist for EJ. I'm just going to say if I had to pick one word for his career in Buffalo, it would be unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because I think he, like a lot of other quarterbacks that have come through here since the turn of the century, that's kind of putting it in a nutshell,
yes.
Isn't it? But no, since the turn of the century, it's not all on those guys and their abilities on the football field. I think there have been a lot of things that have detracted from a lot of these quarterbacks that have come through here from maximizing their potential.
Yeah.
Whether it's an offensive scheme change after they're here for 1 year and then they've got a new scheme that they got to learn, execute plays with players, whether it's a coaching change. These things are crippling for a young quarterback who's trying to advance his game year after year. Now, that's not the only reason that EJ failed here in Buffalo to be a starting quarterback, a capable starting quarterback. He's part of it also. I don't think there's any question about that. But the construct of coaching staff, system, philosophy, that detracted from his game. You could say it detracted from J.P. Lossman's game. I mean, you can even make the argument that it somewhat detracted from, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick's game, although he played almost his whole time here under Chan Gailey. So that was the one advantage that Fitz had, and he's probably your most productive quarterback in Buffalo since Drew Bledsoe was throwing the football here. So, you know, that's I think there's something to be said for that. Would EJ have ever been a great quarterback in this league? Probably not. But you can go right to his rookie year and say, look at what happened. Because under first-year coach Doug Marrone, it looked like a fresh start, clean slate. But they signed Kevin Cobb to be the starting quarterback in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy gets his fifth career concussion in a preseason game in Washington. And all of a sudden, EJ has to run the show as a wet-behind-the-ears rookie. And he got off to a decent start in week one, played well. Week two, he has the comeback win over Carolina. And with 2 seconds left, throws the game-winning touchdown pass to Stevie Johnson to win that game. And then he gets hurt in Cleveland in week five, and it all goes the wrong way. And there really wasn't an answer there. And then there was trust issues between him and the offensive staff. And bang, you know, they plug Kyle Orton in the next year, and it just goes downhill from there. And so that's why unfortunate kind of rings in my ears when you think about his 4 years here.
And I think people underestimate the system aspect of this and the coaching staffs, especially with quarterbacks and young quarterbacks, because when you're older, like a Matt Ryan or somebody like that, like he can make the transition with the new coach because he's been in this league, he knows what he's doing. But when you're young, a rookie type of guy, and now you're going through every year and you're getting a new – or every other year you're getting a new coach, a new system. Oh, by the way, you know, you weren't like a surefire, this guy's a first-round pick. You ended up going in the first round, but it wasn't like this guy should be a first-round pick, you know. So you had a lot of improvement to make just in his game. But now you have to change system after system. You have to learn that. New coaching staffs are coming in. They're teaching you different things. It really is unfortunate for him, you know, for quarterback, for any position in this game, but especially quarterback, when there's so much that goes through your mind every single day, every single play, and now every single year, you have to learn new things. It's tough.
The only good thing for EJ as he goes to Oakland, even though it will be a new system, is the fact that he goes there with some familiarity with the OC in Todd Downing, who was here coaching for a couple of years with the offensive staff. So he has that level of familiarity there. And I think Todd Downing brought him in part because he knows what kind of a good soldier that EJ is. I mean, this is a guy that comes from a military family, understood discipline at an early age, always does the right thing, works hard. You know, it just hasn't always translated on the field. But I think they know they have a good soldier behind Derek Carr and EJ Manuel, whether he's the two or the three, because they have Connor Cook there also.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any guarantee that he's even on that roster.
I know.
On what happens with Connor Cook. I mean, he could be in a totally competitive situation.
I think it's a totally competitive situation when you look at the way those guys played once Carr went down. And, I mean, those guys, none of those guys could get it done for him. And I think now they're looking like, we need to make sure we have a backup.
Is there a better answer?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so that I think it's going to be an open competition out there for the backup in Oakland.
It is the John Murphy Show. Chris Brown filling in for John Murphy here on a happy St. Patrick's Day, NCAA March Madness weekend. I'll be here with Donald up until 3 o'clock. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, here from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown in for John Murphy here on the John Murphy Show on a Friday. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Donald Jones alongside me. John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. And as we were talking in the first segment about news of the day here at One Bills Drive, it is the fact that the Bills match the offer sheet for Ryan Groy that was signed by the Los Angeles Rams, presented to Groy by the Los Angeles Rams. And joining us on the line right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline is Ryan Groy, who is locked up with the Buffalo Bills for the next couple of years. Ryan, good afternoon. Is it a good Friday for you?
It's a great Friday. It is.
Hey, man, what is your thought process when all of this stuff is happening? I mean, first you get the tender, and then now all of a sudden another team comes in, they make an offer, the Bills have to match it. The Bills didn't match it right away. They took a couple of days. What was your thought process during all of this?
You know, I was just trying to stay calm. You know, I had no idea what was going to happen. Truly no idea. You know, obviously, Aaron Cromer was at the Rams. That's who I played with. You know, he was offensive line coach with the Bills last year. And then Juan Castillo is the O-line coach here. And I know that I have history with both of them, know them both very well. And I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, it was crazy.
It's nuts because as a restricted free agent, it really is kind of a restrictive situation. Though in this particular instance, you had some measure of say because once that offer sheet comes to you, now the ball's kind of in your court at least to at least pick a direction, you know, which you did.
Yeah.
And obviously it's better money. Let's sign the thing. But so you do that. But then the ball, after you sign it, is not in your court anymore.
Yeah,
is it kind of weird?
Yeah.
Like your head kind of spins because I've got control, now I don't have control. It just seems like a bizarre thing to kind of mentally process while you're waiting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a roller coaster ride, no doubt about it. I mean, it was like one day we're discussing with a couple different teams and trying to get, you know, the money right, this and that, and then we sign it, like you said, and all of a sudden it's not in our decision anymore. We have no control over it. And then the other thing was that I was undrafted, so it's not like the Bills, had they let me go to another team, they wouldn't have gotten anything in compensation. So that was another part where it was like, I really don't know what's going to happen now, you know?
Ryan, when you signed the offer, did you start looking at homes and the taxes and the prices in L.A. and say, whoa, I don't know about that?
It's almost double out there.
Yes, I did. Oh, my gosh. And it's not like New York state income tax is very cheap in itself, but California is a whole new ballgame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think New York state for the pro athlete tax, it's like 8.8, but California is almost 14.
That's crazy.
Almost 14. Man.
Yeah.
Yep. And you're from a small town. You were like, you know what? I don't know about LA. They got to just go ahead back to Buffalo.
Now, you mentioned the chatter, you mentioned the chatter, Ryan, after, you know, the tender's placed on you. There's no compensation, so that had to probably look attractive to a lot of teams. How busy was your agent the first you know, a few days after the qualifying offer went on you from the Bills. I mean, you don't have to name teams, but I'm just kind of curious as to how busy the phones were for your agent.
We were busy. We were busy. I mean, we had a lot of inquiries, at least. You know, it got down to three or four teams talking, you know, offers. And then at the end of it, it was two teams that really were battling hard. And, you know, we ended up picking the Rams. But obviously, you know, I'm jacked up to be back with the Bills. So,
and now that you're coming back to Buffalo, have you had a chance to speak to everyone? Doug, Coach McDermott, Juan Castillo, everyone?
Talked to Juan. I talked to I just texted Doug yesterday and told him thank you. You know, I'm happy to be back. But that's really about it. I know they're all busy and, you know, didn't want to take up too much of their time, but you know, I'm super pumped up to be back.
Yeah, and I mean that was really the final step in this whole process. The Bills had to step up to keep you in the fold. How did it feel to see a team, when pressed to make that kind of decision, step up and really kind of put their best foot forward and say, yeah, we do want you here?
It was great. I mean, it felt really good, honestly. I mean, I gave all I could last year. I did whatever I could, you know, for the team. And it felt good that, you know, I think that they saw that. And I think that they know that I'm going to continue to work hard and do whatever I can for the team and whatever I need to in this situation.
Now, I know you said do everything you can for the team and everything you can and need for the situation.
Donald's got a lobbying effort that he's working on.
I'm not even talking about that. But when you go into every year, are you trying to push for a starting spot, even though you know the guys that right now are on the, you know, in the starting spots?
Well, absolutely. And that's what was different about the whole situation was I would go into any of these other teams and I'd be a starter. And that was, you know, here, obviously I'm not going to go in and, you know, on paper right now, I'm not a starter. But, of course, you're going to go to try to go in and start. It's not like I'm not going and, you know, fight for a backup job. Just not my nature to do, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to fight to be second best. But, you know, go in and do what I can and obviously push the guys ahead of me and make the team better.
I know a lot has been made over the last year or so. Obviously, when the Bills last offseason were able to keep Richie and Cordy in the fold with new contracts, you know, a lot was made about the continuity up front, and that certainly paid dividends, you know, as evidenced by some of the production you guys were able to have on the offensive side of the ball last year, being a top 10 scoring team, a top rushing team, a top 6 red zone team. But I think what's kind of gone by the board here in this offseason is what's been done with the line depth. You know, and I'm not saying that you can't be a starter this year. That could very well happen if you put together a nice camp. But when you think about you being back in the fold now, Dukas being added, you know, as probably a swing guard, you know, for lack of a better description, not seeing him in this mix totally yet. Patrick Lewis is here now for a full off season. What can be said, at least in your mind, knowing the guys like you do, about not only the front five, so to speak, but the line depth that is now here on this roster?
I mean, it's great. It's even nothing like we had last year. I mean, to anybody else, I wasn't known name last year. We didn't have Patrick Lewis yet. We had just had a lot of unknowns, and now we have a lot of guys with a lot of experience. I mean, Vlad's played a lot of ball. Mm-hmm. Pat Lewis has played a lot of ball. Even Quanjo.
Right.
I've started 10 games. You know, we have a lot of experience now, and we have, you know, we've gotten to know each other so well that it's going to be fun. It'll be fun to watch for sure.
Now, Coach Rick Dennison comes over with that zone running scheme, play action, down the field type of offense. When you're running that zone running scheme, how different is that from what you guys ran last year from an offensive line standpoint?
Not a whole lot different. I mean, we had a lot of that in the playbook. You know, we ran a lot of that stuff in camp and, you know, this and that. And it's not like we can't do it. We had set up a lot of stuff by running power, running inside zone instead of outside zone. But, no, I mean, I think that we'll be fine doing it. You know, we have a good line. We have a big offensive line, but we're very versatile. So I think we'll be able to do whatever they throw at us.
I want to get an expert opinion on this, since you can answer this intelligently, because I was at the combine. Well, no, I was at the combine a few weeks ago, and some people, you know, in the Denver media were coming up to me and talking to me about Dennison's offense and saying, you know, I don't know if, you know, Shady's skill set really matches what they're doing. And I'm thinking to myself, Shady on a stretch play with multiple hole options? That seems pretty – that seems pretty – I mean, I'm not a coach, but that seems like a pretty good thing to me.
That's
can you,
you
just
want.
Maybe
did
confirm –
you ever watch him with the Eagles?
Well, I mean, can
all
you,
they did.
I know, yeah. So can you just confirm that for me so I feel better about what my thoughts are compared to what these people were telling me?
Oh, my gosh, absolutely. I mean, back in when he played for Philadelphia, that's all they did was run outside zone. And I mean, you're just making room for Shady to work. And the question, the big question was he could he get used to running gap schemes when he got here? Because we run a lot of gap schemes, and he's more of an outside zone back. So no, I think this is his bread and butter. I mean, he's gonna thrive in this offense. It's going to be awesome.
I mean, that must have been the guy sitting next to you that everybody in that room could hear.
Oh, what a loudmouth, man. Holy cow. I'm like, are you serious? You got to be kidding me to think he's not. I mean, he's. I think we all agree that, I mean, LeSean is kind of a universal fit for just about whatever you want to do. But I almost think that this scheme might be even better
than what he was running last year.
Right. Yeah. I mean, do you
no
see
doubt.
That? Yeah.
No doubt.
When you look at it, they brought in some extra backs, a new fullback who can catch the ball out of the backfield. They also brought in Mike Tolbert, who I don't know if you know him, but he's going to be a lot of personality in the locker room. Is that something that you feel like you guys need a little bit more personality and leadership in that locker room?
Absolutely. You know, anytime you're mixing up, having fun, I mean, it brings out personalities in everybody. And, you know, I think we'll bring a great leadership aspect where it's not, you know, we'll goof around when it's time to goof around, but, you know, we'll lock in and get to business when it's time to. And I think that's important. I think that's what we kind of lose right now and what we're struggling with right, you know, the last 2 years is, you know, we got to lock it in at certain times, and that's what we've kind of been missing.
And then I know that, you know, the team has lost a couple of receivers here who were pretty accomplished blockers and helped in the run game, guys like Robert Woods. But now you've got these fullback pieces, you know, in Tolbert and in DeMarco, I mean, who's gone to the Pro Bowl each of the last 2 years as a fullback on the NFC side.
And been to each of the last two Super Bowls.
Right. And so you look, you know, different roles can come from different places. I would imagine that Coach Dennison is the kind of coordinator that can probably move those parts around and execute those blocking responsibilities, even though you might not have receivers that, you know, you have receivers now that are probably unknowns in that department. Do you feel like the fullbacks that you guys have added can maybe pick up that slack, so to speak?
Absolutely. You know, from what I've seen, they're both very versatile guys, and, you know, they can do a little bit of everything. So, I mean, maybe throwing both of them in, you know, maybe putting, you know, one guy in certain situations, one guy in another, but of course it's going to help with blocking. I mean, they can do a little bit of everything, so it's not like they're just one-trick ponies. You know, I think they'll work out great.
Awesome. And we'd be remiss if we did not ask, how far in your bracket do you have Wisconsin going?
Right.
Going all the way.
Okay.
We're going all the way.
Well, now that you're locked up, man, hopefully you can get back up here today. Maybe you can see the game tomorrow here in Buffalo.
Yeah, you got to try to score some tickets. They're going to be here. Yeah, they're here on Saturday.
Saturday.
Koenig was lighting it up last night. He eight threes, right? He was unbelievable.
That was awesome.
And I know you said you don't even watch Wisconsin basketball that much. So are you watching now at least?
I watch a whole lot. Yeah, I watch. I watch March Madness. That's about it. That's about as much basketball as I watch.
Yeah, man. I don't know. That's like a bandwagon fan almost. you only watch when they're in the tournament.
That's exactly what it is.
Well, Ryan, thanks for giving us some time here in the off season. We always appreciate it. But there was good news to share, so we wanted to get you on and have you share it with us. So we're glad you're back in the fold. We look forward to seeing you here in the not-too-distant future.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, Ryan Groy there on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Here on the John Murphy Show, we are going to take a break now, but when we come back, we'll have some more things to discuss, some NFL news. There's some other developments here, some signings. A franchise player got signed to a long-term deal by his team today. We'll tell you who that is coming up next here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Donald Jones, back on the John Murphy Show. I'm filling in for John here on Friday, St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. How much Irish blood you got in you, Donald?
None that I know of.
I got about 25%, so Erin go brah.
Do you celebrate? Will you go to the parade on Sunday and do all that stuff? Or
No, not really.
Okay.
Not really, but we could talk a little bit more about that in a second here.
A quick reminder
to Bills fans, there is still a chance to get in on the Buffalo Bills schedule challenge. It's still going on at BuffaloBills.com. A chance to win two 2017 club seat season tickets, two on-field passes for the home opener, and an autographed helmet. Just go to BuffaloBills.com and submit your entry. Give yourself a shot at this thing. And from what I understand, there's a little tweak to it this year. They're running it a little bit differently than they have in the past, so it's kind of a new twist on the Bills schedule challenge. So be sure to go to BuffaloBills.com and see if you can outsmart your fellow Bills fans and win this thing, because that's a pretty good deal. Down on the field for the home opener, I mean, I think we all know what the electric atmosphere is like, particularly for the home opener. I mean, people are charged up. The weather's usually awesome.
Yeah. New coaching staff. I think it's – I mean, it's always electric,
yeah,
but it's going to be electric this year. Like you said, the weather should be nice.
Yeah.
So, it's a great opportunity to be down on the field. I can't even get down on the field.
You got to have more pull than that.
I know. I don't know what's going on, man. I got to go talk to Mark Honan.
So, as promised, we said a franchise player has been signed to a long-term contract extension. He hasn't been signed, but he has agreed to terms, at least according to most reports. Jason Pierre-Paul, pass rusher for the Giants, back on the squad for years to come. I mean, he was franchised. He was going to probably be there in 2017, but this is a very good move for the Giants. Because beyond him, you know, the options are pretty limited in terms of a true guy that other teams have to game plan for from a pass rushing perspective on that roster.
You know, I think when you look at, first of all, kudos to him for what he went through, what, 2 years ago on 4th of July, and to where he is today, to now signing a long-term deal. They were talking about possibly he might not ever play again. You know, because how could he play again? How could he make tackles when he doesn't have an arm? No, he doesn't have fingers to even grab on to somebody. So, you know, you have to really give him his props for making that happen. We have a Jason Pierre-Paul tweet that went out
recently. Yeah, apparently he's not happy that New York media is saying, he signed, it's done. You
know? Exactly. So, I'm quoting his tweet.
Yeah, fire,
so
you don't I want to hear this.
So you don't think my English is bad here. But he said, what the heck is people talking about? I ain't signed nothing. And he said, the next tweet says, that's New York media for you. They always want the story first, and they got it wrong. Now, this is the second person that's tweeted something out this year, within the last couple of days, that something has gone out, and they haven't signed yet. So are we in the media too quick on the
– Well, let me just say that it wasn't the media's mistake
in the
case of Andre Holmes.
Right.
Because that was an NFLPA mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody at the office there mistook it for a finalized contract, not a contract offer. So the media is blameless in that situation as far as I see it.
Gotcha.
This one, New York media, I mean, I would like to think that Jason Pierre-Paul has been in New York long enough
to understand,
to kind of know how that whole thing churns and works. People are trying to get the story first.
Right.
That's their job. It's dog-eat-dog in that New York media market.
Oh,
maybe more than anywhere else. So to not anticipate that or expect that or see someone maybe jump the gun a little bit, but if it proves to be accurate and it is done and he ends up signing it in a day.
That's a good signing. I think it's a good signing for that team, a defense that – was really improved last year. One of the biggest reasons why they ended up going into the playoffs. I think he is really a pivotal piece for that defense. If you look at the years that they won the Super Bowls, it was because they had great defensive lines. And they're still running the same scheme, you know, so they need to make sure that they have good pieces, especially on the edge. We know in this game, those edge rushers are very important, especially in a 4-3 type of scheme.
And in that division, too.
Right.
You got Kirk Cousins, who, at least right now,
you
think is going to be back. Dak Prescott, a guy that can move around, made a lot of plays for the Cowboys last year. The Eagles look like they have their franchise guy in Carson Wentz. I mean, you got to have a, a premier pass rusher in that division.
You need guys who can get to the quarterback, and that's across the league. But in that division, oh, yeah, especially with Kirk Cousins and Dak Prescott.
And maybe the most interesting thing about the Giants is there used to be a team much like the Steelers and the Packers who used to build through the draft, re-sign their own, and just plug in guys as they developed. Mm-hmm. But the last couple of years, Jerry Reese has gone out and spent money, and big money at that, on the free agent markets. It's an interesting shift in philosophy.
You know, I know we get into a break here, but you look at a team like the Giants who, like you said, traditionally, they don't spend money like that. You look at a team like the Patriots. Traditionally, they don't spend money. I think it's going to show that these teams see the window closing on, their franchise quarterbacks, mm-hmm. and they want to win now. And so they're going out and getting the right pieces, but they have to spend money to get those pieces. And that's what I think both of those franchises are doing right now.
When we come back, which former Bills running back is a team trying to pull out of retirement in the NFL? We'll have more on that on the other side here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
First, the news here at One Bills Drive. Buffalo matched the offer sheet signed by Ryan Groy from the Los Angeles Rams earlier in the week. The two-year deal will keep the versatile lineman on Buffalo's roster through the 2018 season. The Bills would not have received any compensation had they lost Groy to the Rams. Groy made 7 starts at center last season in place of the injured Eric Wood. 2017 will be Groy's 3rd season in a Bills uniform. NFL news, the Oakland Raiders are reportedly trying to pull hometown running back Marshawn Lynch out of retirement. The Raiders just lost running back Latavius Murray in free agency. He signed with the Minnesota Vikings the other day. Lynch retired from the NFL following the 2015 season. The Bills' former first-round pick will be 31 years old in April. The Giants placed the franchise tag on Jason Pierre-Paul earlier this offseason. News today that New York has successfully agreed to terms on a long-term deal with Pierre-Paul. It's reportedly a 4-year agreement to keep Pierre-Paul as their top pass rusher. The Giants also reportedly signing a quarterback from the other New York team. The Giants have reached an agreement with Jets free agent quarterback Geno Smith. Smith, a former second-round pick of the Jets in the 2013 draft. He's had a trying career with the Jets, to say the least. He'll battle to be the backup quarterback with the Giants behind Eli Manning. Free agent wide receiver Kamar Aiken is visiting with the Indianapolis Colts today. Aiken was reportedly drawing interest from the Bills earlier in the free agent period. Another player who the Bills were interested in Seattle, free agent cornerback Deshaun Sheed, has re-signed with the Seahawks, agreeing on a 1-year deal. The NCAA tournament continues with first-round play today. A couple of games just got underway here in the last hour. The 10 seed Oklahoma State against the 7 seed Michigan in the Midwest region. And then over in the East, the New Mexico State Lobos, number 14 seed, going against the number 3 seed Baylor team. And the Buffalo Sabres back on the ice tonight in Anaheim against the Mighty Ducks. Buffalo is trying to bounce back after their shutout loss last night at the hands of the LA Kings. That's your sports update here on the John Murphy Show as we begin hour number 2. Chris Brown in for John Murphy off here on this St. Patrick's Day, and no doubt taking in that Michigan game as we speak.
Yeah. If not, he's definitely on his phone checking the scores. He's into it. And there's a lot of people there's a lot of people in Buffalo supporting Michigan. Especially since Syracuse is not in.
There's a local tie because their head coach John Beilein is from the Lockport area, Niagara mm-hmm. County native, so there is a natural affinity. And he coached at Canisius, worked his way up through the ranks, mm-hmm. and, you know, became a very successful coach, moved on to West Virginia, now at Michigan, obviously got to the final a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So there's a tie there. If you're from Buffalo, people from Buffalo are on board with you, and they'll back you all the way. And it's no different for him. And, you know, I know John Beilein still has family up in Niagara County up there, right. And gets back as often as he can, especially in the summertime. Tries to even do a little recruiting around here when somebody's of interest in the area. So, yeah, I mean, that's really the tie there. So not surprising that there's a lot of people that back Michigan.
We
got a couple
of guys
in the office that back Michigan. Michigan football maybe a little bit more than
the basketball.
Michigan basketball.
But, yeah, I mean, it was – I guess since Syracuse wasn't in it, then it was like – the next, because you would expect here.
The next best
people,
option.
Yeah, the next best option would be Michigan with that tie.
I got you. I got you. But, you know, we talked about some of the NFL news late in the last hour. We have more news, as I mentioned in the update.
Mm-hmm.
Marshawn Lynch. There were some rumblings that teams were trying to pull him out of retirement last year, most notably the Seahawks, who I believe still have his rights.
Yes, they do.
As it plays out. So news now coming from some of the major national NFL reporters that Marshawn Lynch is trying to be pulled out of retirement by his hometown team, the Oakland Raiders. And you wonder, I mean, that could be the tipping point for a guy like Marshawn, who's very proud of where he comes from, being an Oakland native, played his college ball at Cal, and now has a chance to play for the team that he grew up rooting for. You wonder if that's enough to tip the scales mm-hmm. and convince him to come back. I'm sure there's a lot of hoops they've got to jump through with the Seahawks to even make it happen.
Yeah.
But I think they want to get a yes from him first and then get to work with the Seahawks, presumably.
I think there's a couple of things in play. First of all, Marshawn Lynch is very proud of Oakland. He is from Oakland. He will tell you that every single day, I am very proud to be from Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
He does a lot in that community. He really does. Even though he was playing in Seattle and even though he was here in Buffalo.
Well, he was here. He was going back and running football
back, yes.
camps and stuff.
He does a lot in that community. I think when you look at it for him, it's like, man, first of all, Oakland is a good team. And so if I can go back to Oakland and help the Oakland Raiders get back to the promised land, to the Super Bowl, and possibly win the Super Bowl, that would be like, man, the icing on the cake for an already great career that he had. You know, I think that is something that that really interests him. I talked to someone who was close to Marshawn earlier today, and they said, listen, don't be surprised if he was to come out of retirement and go back to Oakland. But like you said, because Seattle still owns his rights, it makes things a little bit tricky.
The other rub is he's going to be 31 in April.
Right.
There are a good number of miles on the tires.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the role that Oakland could potentially have in mind here? Obviously, Latavius Murray is out of the picture. You would anticipate he would fill that more of that power back role that Murray filled, because they've got Jalen Richard and the Washington kid there, who are really kind of the scat back, speed option, pass receiving type backs. Who's the main guy, or are they going strictly committee and just plugging in whoever they need on that down and distance? How do you see
that playing out?
If we take
that makes sense. If they have scat backs, then they need a guy who can pound it in and some short yardage stuff, who can score touchdowns for you in the red zone. You know, you get down into that 5 yard range. A guy like Beast Mode, who, you know, 31. Is up there. He does have miles on him.
But he got to rest all last year.
He got to rest, you know. So I would think that he would be anxious to come back and play. And if there's anybody who loves this game, it's Marshawn Lynch. Like, he loves to play football.
I think the way you've got to pitch it to him, though, is you're not going to be making 250 carries a season.
Mm-hmm.
We only need you for, like, 150 to maybe 200 at best.
Right.
But the other – if I'm Marshawn Lynch, this is an attractive option to me, not only because it's the team I grew up rooting for and be cool to play for the Raiders and all of that, silver and black. How about that line?
Yes.
I'm 165 pounds soaking wet, and I wouldn't mind running behind that group. Because there'd be a lot of room for a person like me to, let alone Marshawn Lynch, who's broad-shouldered and 220-something pounds.
So. Right. I mean, he'd have to look at that line and say, man. Like, he has to look at what they did last year, Latavius Murray, and how he was able to get through there, how good and big that offensive line, and say, you know what, I might not have to take the pounding that I had to take in Seattle, because in Seattle, they never had an offensive line like that while he was there. I mean, I can't remember them you saying, like, man, this is like a very good offensive line. They never really put money into their offensive line. He was just able to just make crazy plays and run people over, starting in the backfield, and he run another four people over on the way to scoring touchdowns. But he wouldn't have to do that in Oakland. And like you said, he's not going to be just the main guy that you ask to carry the load. They have other guys, and they have good receivers as well. They have a very good quarterback, you know, so he would come in and really just complement everything else, every other piece that's in that offense, and it's the hometown team. I think that's something that he would really like to do. I'm not sure if they can make it happen with, you know, if Seattle would allow that to happen, but, man, it would be interesting to see him go back to Oakland. What? I mean, just think about his personality going back to Oakland And you're talking about possibly the Oakland Raiders moving from Oakland to Vegas soon. Marshawn would love to go back to Oakland, play for them while they're still in Oakland, and possibly take that team to the Super Bowl and possibly win a Super Bowl. He would love to do something like that.
Yeah, there's personal feelings there,
yeah,
which I think makes it an interesting proposition. 803-0551, 888-550-2550, if you want to kind of chime in on the whole Marshawn situation, whether that's a good idea or not. The other things that are kind of happening around the league that have some Bills ties based on some of the interest they've expressed in some players through the course of the offseason is at wide receiver. Kamar Akins kind of making some free agent visits here. Mm-hmm. He's going to Indy today. He's got another one on Monday. Where is he going on Monday? Seattle. He's going to Seattle on Monday. You know, you look at what – the way I'm looking at the teams he's listening to, at least, you know, they talked with the Bills. The Bills expressed some interest. Mm-hmm. You've got an athletic quarterback in Tyrod Taylor with whom he's familiar, having been in Baltimore there with him. Then you have Andrew Luck in Indy and a receiving core that needs help, you know, aside from T.Y. Hilton. You know, they need some extra pieces there. Got a fairly decent tight end there. But, you know, then you – but they moved – traded Dwayne Allen. You know, so that guy's out of the mix. They like the young kid there whose name's escaping me right now. And then Seattle, you know, Russell Wilson, more of an athletic type, but a guy that can throw the football and has matured as a passer. So speaking from a receiver perspective, knowing he's played primarily with Joe Flacco in his career, do you want to stick with a similar type of quarterback as you're weighing your options? I mean, money obviously is the biggest issue here and probably will be when all is said and done, but from who you're playing with perspective as a receiver, do you want to kind of have a similar type quarterback throwing to you that you've had the previous years, or do you explore those other options and maybe go with somebody that has a different kind of skill set?
I think he would – the quarterback – is one part of it. Obviously, the money is going to be number one. The quarterback is one part of it, and I think when you look at Russell Wilson, you look at Andrew Luck, you look at Tyrod Taylor here, there were rumblings of, you know, the Bills talking to him. I don't know if necessarily he would care if the quarterback is the same type as Joe Flacco. I think for him, the money is the number one issue, and second, you know, how much playing time is he going to get, you know? And I think when he looks at it, obviously, when I talk to him about here, he knows that he can play here. He knows that he can be a guy here because they don't really have anybody else on the roster. Mm-hmm. And Indianapolis, he knows, you know, all they have really is T.Y. Hilton. He can go there and play as well. He was really upset with 2 years ago, him becoming the number one, producing like he did for them. And then last year, they basically just put him back on special teams because Steve Smith came back. He was very upset with that.
And Breshad Perriman, their high draft pick, who was injured as a rookie, was back healthy this past year.
And Mike
they're
Wallace.
Trying to push that agenda.
Right. And we all know when they draft someone in the first round, they want that person to succeed. They want that player to succeed. And they had Mike Wallace, you know. And so he was very upset with that. Like, man.
So they kind of just put him back on the back burner. So he's not going to be back in Baltimore. That's probably a pretty safe thing to assume there. He's done.
He's done in Baltimore. Yeah. Like, I don't even know if he would sign back if he's literally told me, like, listen, I will sit.
Wow.
I don't have anybody. I will sit. Like, he does not he does not want to go back there.
All right. So that's off the table. All right.
I think he wants a chance to play somewhere. Here could be that opportunity. Indianapolis could be that opportunity. When you look at Seattle, I don't see that in Seattle. You know, like they have
same kind of opportunity. They have established guys who Russell knows well, wants to throw to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a synergy there that previously exists. You know, cracking into that, I would tend to think, would be a lot harder.
It would definitely be a lot harder. So I would think that Indianapolis or the Bills would be the best opportunities for him to come in and play. He's probably still going to play special teams because he is good in special teams, but at least he would be in the offense and be a part of the offense, because even when he was on the field on offense for Baltimore, they were looking to Steve Smith. They were looking to Mike Wallace. He wants to be a part of the offense, and I think, you know, here in Indianapolis gives him the best opportunity for that.
So we've talked about the receiver that could come to the Bills if money's right, situation looks right for a guy like Kamar Akin. But what about the guys that they have added? You know, Jeremy Butler, Philly Brown, you know, two guys that have some time in the league. Butler, I think the most interesting thing there is the familiarity he has with Tyrod,
mm-hmm.
because they played together, you know, his rookie year there before Tyrod left to come to Buffalo.
Yep.
And there was some preseason chemistry between the two, at least as Jeremy describes it.
Mm-hmm.
He had a really good preseason. He had a shoulder injury that kind of kept him out of practice for a couple of weeks. But he said, my shoulder was good in 2 weeks, and I wasn't cleared to practice, but I was getting on the practice field and asking Tyrod to throw to me after.
Right.
Because I was still able to run routes and catch the ball. And he felt there was chemistry there, and he's hoping to clearly recapture that here. I think it's a savvy move by him.
I think it is. I mean,
a savvy career move, I guess.
Career move, yeah. Anytime as a receiver, you can go to a place and the quarterback is going to be a guy who you've had chemistry with, a guy who you might train with in the offseason. You know, he's familiar with throwing you the ball. You know, so when you come here, you're going to, at least in training camp, you have an opportunity for him to throw you the ball because he's familiar, and that's going to help your case for either making this team or, you know, cracking the starting lineup or even as a 3 or 4 receiver, you know. So I think it's a very smart career move for him. Now he has to just come in and make plays.
Just reading up on him and the way the Baltimore media kind of described his situation coming through the training camp in Baltimore and, you know, not ultimately making the 53-man roster at the start, practice squad, that kind of thing. They said the thing that hurt him the most back then was that he didn't really offer a whole lot on special teams. Mm. And so despite the fact that he had wildly productive numbers with the second team offense in the preseason, I think they wanted to know they could use him in other capacities, and they weren't sure about that. So they said, well, let's just put him here. I'm curious to see, because he said on the conference call this week when we had him on that he's ready to contribute on special teams. I want to know where his game has advanced in that phase of the game, because I think it's going to have to happen to have an equal chance here.
You do. I mean, you know, even if you get drafted in the first round, on some teams you're still going to play special teams. Like, that's just how they view you. You're a rookie, you're going to play special teams.
Right.
So when you come in this league undrafted, you don't have to just be willing. Like, you have to be good at it. And the team, the coach, the special teams coach, Crossman, has to say, listen, this kid is good, and I need him on my special teams for you to make the team. Like, that's just how it has to be. For him, back in Baltimore, he wasn't able to get that done back then. Now, you would hope and you would think that he's a lot smarter and understands, listen, I have to be good on special teams if I want to make any roster in this league right now. If I'm good in special teams, then my opportunity might come during the course of a season to play an offense, and then once that opportunity comes, I can show what I can do on offense. But I know I have to make this team, be good on special teams, and be willing and eager to do it.
803-0550 if you want to chime in on the Bills receiver situation and what they've added to this point, what you still think they need to add. But, you know, I'm looking at Philly Brown now too, and this is what I see when I look at him. So you've got a guy, you know, not a giant. He's 5'11", 190, mm-hmm. only 25 years old, but has time in the league, time on the field. Granted, he's spent a good deal of time on special teams. He's made some contributions on offense, not with any alarming productivity.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at his numbers from 2014 to 2016. He's got 21 catches, 31 receptions, 27 receptions. Clearly a guy who was a spot role kind of player. But now that he's got 3 years under his belt, is there the opportunity there in this scenario here where there's vacancies to be filled where he can make that next step and maybe jump to a 40 or 50 catch guy,
mm-hmm.
you know, in his fourth season in the NFL? I'm just curious, and you might not know his game any better than I do, you know, having not seen him week to week, but I'm curious if this is a guy. It's clearly a guy that McDermott has been around and feels can maybe make that next step for this passing game.
I think when you look at him and what he's done thus far in his career, like you said, he's played special teams. He has been a guy who did step in and make some plays for Carolina when, you know, they didn't have anything. Once Benjamin went down, Kelvin Benjamin, they didn't have anybody. They had Ted Ginn, who is really a kick returner. He's not a wide receiver like that. And they had the rest of the guys. I mean, these guys had to step up and make plays, and they ended up taking that team all the way to the Super Bowl. You know, so he's a guy who's played on the big stage. He's made some plays for them out there in Carolina. For me, he's not overly, like, the fastest guy on the field. I feel like he's more of a slot guy. I think when you look at it, he probably, you know, if he was a number three, he's going to be in on third down situations. I think, you know, I see them running a lot more two tight ends, two wide receivers sets this year with that zone scheme. I just see that being the case. So I would think that a guy like this would be in on third down. But he is a guy who can come in and catch the ball. You see him, when you see his highlights, he does make good catches. He makes catches. He makes plays over the middle of the field, which is something that you need for a guy like this. But I think when you look at this receiving core right now, you know, outside of Sammy Watkins, like you said, there's nobody. There's going to be open competition. Even if they draft a rookie high, first or second, you're going to say, okay, that guy's going to be your number two. But that is no sure thing that he's going to come into camp and become your sure number two receiver, you know? So I think it's going to be an open competition for all of these guys to get in there and really compete for that number two and number three spot, number four spot. And, you know, the one who performs in camp is the one who ends up starting on week one.
And maybe just because he wears jersey number 10 also, but I kind of think that the Bills look at him as a guy that can kind of fill some of that gritty Robert Woods role, you know, blocking in the run game, you know, making those tough catches over the middle. I kind of see Colby Listonby as a guy that they see potentially as the Goodwin replacement, the speed, stretch the field guy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, then you say, okay, where's the guy that's going to be like a true number two? Who's that guy? And in all likelihood, it's probably coming in the draft, you know, as you were kind of touching on it there a little bit, because you've got a deep receiver class, according to the experts, you know, the draftniks, the guys that study this stuff, who have been in NFL scouting positions in their careers and now are on the media side. They believe that you can get a wide receiver that can come in, be NFL ready, and make an impact all the way down to round three. You know, and so I tend to think that they're going to look for the most NFL ready receiver they can find when they're on the clock and they feel it's time to take a receiver, which is why I prefer a guy like Corey Davis over Mike Williams, because he's just more NFL ready from a route running perspective. He's more versatile. He's just a better fit, I think, for what the Bills need. That's not to say that Mike Williams can't come in here and be a successful NFL receiver, but I just think for what you need on the field from a rookie right away, week one, Corey Davis is just more of the NFL ready package to help you in September, not in November and December.
I have to agree with you. For me, you look at Mike Williams, you compare him to, you know, he ran his 40 yesterday, and they're like conflicting times on him. I saw as low as 4.49. I've seen 4.58.
And we'll get some details on that, by the way, because we're going to talk to somebody who was at the Clemson Pro Day next hour to kind of get the lowdown on him and all the other prospects coming out of Clemson. There's about 10, 12 draftable kids.
Yeah, it was. I think when you look at Mike Williams, he's a big physical guy. He can box you out. He's never really, you know, run past everybody to make plays. You know, he's a guy. The DB is usually right there with him. He just jumps up and makes the catch over that person.
Now, that's easier said than done.
It is.
At the NFL level,
it
right?
is. Right. I mean, it's not something that you can say, listen, when I get to the league, I can do exactly what I did in college. You know, it's just the DBs are that much. First of all, they're bigger here, and they're smarter. You know, they understand the technique and all that stuff. So it's a transition for every receiver coming into this league. But if you're a guy who's limited in what you do, it makes it that much harder for you to transition into being a good NFL receiver. You see Treadwell is his name, right? That came out
Quan
last year.
Treadwell.
Yeah, from Ole Miss. He didn't come in and make a big splash like everybody was saying.
And you can even look at Cordarrelle Patterson, who's now in Oakland.
Right.
You know, here's a guy that was a dynamic player, big play guy in college at Tennessee, and then I think he transferred and went somewhere else, or I might be mixing him up with Derek Rogers, who was here.
Right. Now, he came from JUCO to Tennessee, though. He had one good year at Tennessee.
Right. And so he comes in, and he can't get on the field as anything else but a returner for his first 3 years.
Right.
Now, he got on the field a little bit this past year on offense, you know, in Minnesota, but not enough to convince them to say, hey, we got to keep this guy.
Exactly.
I mean, he's in Oakland now.
Exactly.
So you look at some of those guys that are, you know, quote-unquote one-trick ponies, And they really have to go to a situation where they can develop their game with a true teacher as a receivers coach. Otherwise, they're relying on just that and against right. the much more physical corners. And, oh, by the way, taller corners in the NFL, that one thing you do well is mitigated exactly. by the talent you're facing across the line from you each and every week.
Right. It just makes it that much harder. So he needs to learn. He has a real transition into this league. Corey Davis, for me, even though right now he has the ankle issue, you haven't been able to see him run yet, I would think that he's going to run a good enough time to I would think somewhere in that like 4.45 to 4.5 range. And that's really all you need for a guy like this. You need a guy who can run routes. Sammy Watkins is your deep guy. If he's on the field, he is the guy going deep. On the other side of him, to complement him, you need a guy who can run routes. So if it's not Corey Davis, then you need to go ahead and drop back down to the second round and get a Zay Jones or a Godwin from Penn State, one of those types of guys, because those guys are they are very good receivers as well, and nobody's talking about them going in the first round, but I'm telling you, they are going to make an impact in this league.
Kevin in Syracuse, Ron in Lackawanna, hang on. We're up against the break. We want to give you your chance to chime in on this, some of the receiver talk that we've been having here for the last few minutes. We'll let you guys weigh in just a second on the other side. We'll take a break right now. This is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Donald Jones, back with you here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. And as promised, we're going to get right to the calls. We're kind of discussing the Bills receiver situation here. And Kevin in Syracuse has an opinion. So let's check in with him and see what he wants to lend to the conversation. Can I punch him up here? Kevin, are you with us?
Trusty 1, 2, 3. I'm here.
Oh, great. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
What do you got for us, Kevin?
Donald, I know you don't like John Ross, but I've been looking at hours and hours of tape of this guy. He is not a track guy that plays football. He's a football player that just happens to be blazing fast. Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing that you can't teach in the NFL is speed. He's very good setting up his defenders. He's very good tracking the ball, and he's a hands catcher. So I understand that he's got a couple things he's got to get worked on as far as surgically, but all of the receivers do. And you know, we always talk about scheme, and this scheme, he would be perfect for Rick Dennison's offense, because now you got left and right, both Sammy and him is fast, so you have to respect that, and he know how to set up his receivers, to go over the middle, you know, do the fake comebacks, all of this stuff. So I'm trying to figure out, you know, what's the hang-up with him as the number one receiver. That's all I had.
I can tell you the hang-up. The hang-up is medical. It's injuries, injury history.
Got medical problems.
Right, but I think you have to – I think we also have to look at the Bills situation at that position over the last 3 or 4 years. How much have injuries decimated that receiving core? I think to make the investment – the level that you'd have to make to get John Ross on your roster, which is probably a first-round pick.
Correct.
I don't know if you can argue that the reward is worth what a lot of teams feel is the risk with him health-wise. Mm-hmm. He didn't do himself any favors at the combine either, because he runs the 40, his calf gets tight, and he can't finish his workout. Mm-hmm. I mean, that didn't do – and as great as 4-2-2 was,
right.
it didn't do him any favors that he had to cut the workout short, couldn't even finish the on-field drills.
He didn't want to finish that drill after he got that 4-2-2.
Now, you can see that. You can definitely see that. Yeah. You know,
worried about Mike Williams' neck. I'm worried about
Corey Davis's ankle.
That's a legitimate concern.
So we still have the same problem with all three of them.
Well, it goes a little deeper with John Ross, because he's had problems with both knees. Mm-hmm. He's had an ACL surgery. He's had problems with both knees, knee injuries, multiple ones in his career. And we're talking about a 22-year-old guy with a long history. So believe me, the level of investment which, again, I think we all agree, he's going to come off the board somewhere in round one. Mm-hmm. I just don't think every NFL team with a receiver need is comfortable making the investment at the first round level in John Ross. That's the hangup. I'm not saying he's not worth it. Some teams will believe he is. But I think if you have a team like the Bills, for example, who have had availability issues to the umpteenth degree at the receiver position, do you want to invest in another guy who is already at age 21, 22, showing those same signs, playing football at a far less physical level at the college level and still not available every week? Now you're going to up the ante.
Yeah.
Undersized guy playing in a supremely physical league, as physical as it gets, and expect him to play four more games a season. We're going to lengthen the season. Mm-hmm. We're going to increase the physical demands and the physicality of the guys he's facing every week and expect him to get through the season. I don't know if what his track record says convinces enough NFL teams to make a first-round investment in him.
Right. So he has the chronic knee issues. He also is about to have shoulder surgery. Is that a labrum surgery?
Yeah, I believe it was.
So, I mean,
I totally forgot. He had surgery this week.
Right. You know, so like, you don't even know how long he's going to be out now. Labrum.
When is he available?
When is he available? You know, so if you're talking about the Bills at 10.
It's usually 4 months, I think, a shoulder labrum. Yeah.
Right. So if you're talking about the Bills at 10, does that make sense to take him at 10?
I don't even know if I trade back and take him at 20.
Right, exactly. I mean, to be honest, I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't go in the first round. I wouldn't be shocked if he was waiting on day two to go. And you see a guy like Zay Jones or one of those guys end up jumping up over John Ross, even with the 4-2-2, just because those chronic issues and the fact that he's just had surgery this week the fact that he ran his 40 and got hurt. Regardless if he ran his 40, ran a 4-2-2 and was like, I'm done.
Yeah,
it looked like to everybody else that you got hurt.
It didn't look good that he couldn't finish the workout. And, yeah, surgery this week. So you know, it's troubling.
We talked to, and you see him, you know, a lot of the routes that he ran in college were go routes. Is he a football player? Yes. But it's one thing to do it at the college level in the Pac-12. It's a different thing to do at this level when the corners are bigger. We were just talking about this. The corners are 6'2", 6'3". They're physical.
And there's a whole bunch of them in this draft class that are 6'2 and above also. So there's more coming in.
So you're talking about now him having to increase the workload because now you're adding four more games. You're adding how physical this game is. And he has to do it every single week. I mean, I wouldn't touch him. I really wouldn't touch him. I'd rather see another receiver go. And I'm not talking about, you know, if you don't go with Mike Williams or Corey Davis, that's totally fine with me. You can go with one of the guys in the second round. I would not touch John Ross at number 10. Wouldn't do it.
Let's get to Ron in Lackawanna, as promised. Ron, let's get you on here because I know you want to chime in on this, but you have a different little spin on receiving options. What do you got for us?
Okay, I honestly believe the Bills already got the guy on the number 10 spot, which is going to be O.J. Howard from Alabama. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be our number 2 receiver. When I watch all these programs on the draft and everything else, he keeps moving up. And I'll tell you, I think he'd be a great pick at the number 10 spot and use him as your number 2 receiver. And they compare him. Where did this coach come from? He came from Carolina. And who is the tight end? Greg Olsen. Mm-hmm. And they complain a lot to Greg Olsen in that. Well, I think it'd be a great fit for the Bills in that.
Yeah, and you're not alone in that thinking. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about this, a lot of chatter, I think, out in cyberspace, maybe than here at One Bills Drive. A lot of chatter about that as being a second way of filling the needs that this team has for their passing game. And I'll tell you, I was at the Senior Bowl. I watched O.J. Howard the entire week. He was one of the two best athletes on the field. Obi Mellon Fonwu is probably the other best natural athlete that was on the field at the Senior Bowl. But Howard was just a step above. He was in a different class than almost every other offensive player that was on the field that week down there in Mobile. And, I mean, I don't have to say what he does. We've all seen it. He runs like a deer. The thing that I think has NFL clubs so excited is they don't feel that the Alabama offense even scratched the surface of what he's capable of doing. I mean, they had a freshman quarterback this year who they tried to, without trying to insult the kid, they tried to dumb down the offense so he could capably let his athletic talents take over. He was largely a running quarterback. Yep. There weren't a whole lot of opportunities for O.J. Howard. So I think NFL scouts, personnel evaluators, they're thinking about the ceiling for him, the upside, the potential that O.J. Howard can bring to a passing league, and they're salivating.
Yeah.
And I think he is a guy that's going to move up the board. I mean, people were talking about him in January at the Senior Bowl being a late first-round pick. I don't think there's any way in heck he's on the board at pick 20.
Nope.
I think he's probably going to go somewhere between 10 and 20 based on a team's need. So could the Bills conceivably take him at 10? I suppose that's an option. I'd feel a whole lot better if they move back a few spots, a half a dozen spots, take him at 16, 17, 18, if that's your preference, if that's your soup du jour, and you think he can do that for you and fill that role, then go ahead and do it. I have no problem. I mean, I saw him for a week. I'm sold on him.
The trouble is, and I'm glad that I'm not Doug Whaley and I have to make these decisions because if you like that guy and you say, listen, we probably can get him, you know, at 14, 15, 16, like, you better be sure that you can get him there.
Or you better feel just as good about what the other options could still be there to wherever you're moving back to. You know, the way Doug Whaley has explained it to me over the years is you're sliding back for – and you're comfortable doing that so long as the talent that you see there, you know, there's enough talent for the number of spots remaining – that you feel good with what's going to fall into your lap at 15, 16, 17, wherever you're going. As long as you're comfortable with the value that still you know is going to be available because there's as many prospects as there are picks, you make the move. You're if you feel it ultimately benefits your team in the form of another choice, you know, this, that, or the other. That's kind of how he operates, and I kind of get the sense that a lot of the other GMs that I've talked to over the years feel the same way. There is that argument, though, too, that you're making. If you like the guy that much, just pick the guy.
Just pick the guy.
But I think that's easier said than done, too, because the Bills, let's go back to the 2013 draft. E.J. Manuel, they're picking at 8. They feel they can slide back and still get the quarterback. Now, Buddy Nix was running the draft then. That was his last draft. And there's been a lot of talk over the years that Doug, who was the assistant GM at the time, felt they could move back again and still get E.J. later.
Yeah.
And Buddy was in your boat. He liked EJ. I'm just going to take him here.
Yeah.
And he took him at 16. So, you know, I think it has happened both ways in the history of the league with the draft. Which way is better? I guess if you're conservative, just let me get my guy. If you want to,
if you're a betting man,
roll the dice a little bit, you know, and you're happy with what a consolation prize could be if he happens to come off the board before where you move down to. You know, I think it's personal preference there in terms of how you want to run your draft room, how you want to add to your roster.
I think now when you talk about O.J. Howard, he can be your number two receiver. I think, you know, if you have Sammy, you have a guy like O.J. Howard, you have Charles Clay. I mean, those are viable weapons running down the field for Tyrod Taylor to get the ball to. And they're bigger weapons for him to see down the field, for him to get the ball to. And I think that's something that he really needs. And I think when you look at the system, a zone scheme, a lot of it is, I think, is going to be two tight end sets, two wide receivers. You're going to need both of those tight ends to be able to get down the field, but you also need guys that can help out in the run game. And I think that's something that O.J. Howard showed in practice at the Senior Bowl that he can do. And you can tell me because you were there.
Yeah, I mean, he showed he was capable, willing. I think he even knows he still has some work to do. But I think they feel the long-range potential there is something that can be built upon and he can grow. I want to try to squeeze Jeff in Buffalo in here before the break because he's been waiting patiently. Jeff, you're on with Chris Brown and Donald Jones here on the John Murphy Show. Jeff, are you with us, sir?
The Don Murphy Show.
Yeah, I know.
Yes. Hello?
Hey, Jeff.
Jeff, what's up?
Yes, Donald brought it up, though, when he said about Jay Jones from Carolina.
Jay Jones,
because he's going to be the guy, and they'll probably get him later because his co isn't his coach there in Buffalo?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, and I don't. I just think I just got a funny because they're not tipping their hand at all. And to me, I look at him; he looks better than John Ross. I think it's because he's Snoop Dogg related to Snoop Dogg or something.
John Ross, he played on Snoop Dogg's Pop Warner team.
Yeah, his youth team. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's all that.
Here's the only concern I have for you, Jeff. Zay Jones isn't a sleeper anymore.
No.
He went down to the Senior Bowl. He had a monster week. He sold me. I thought he was one of the three best receivers down there the whole week. Maybe the best of that group. And granted, that's a select group. I mean, it's not everybody that's in the draft class, obviously. But I think this is a kid that, going into the Senior Bowl, was seen as a strict day two type pick. I think he put together a good week of work down there. This guy will win anyone over in an interview room.
Yeah.
He is so articulate, got his head on straight. I talked to him at the combine about Coach McGagan, who's the Bills receivers coach now, had him his last year at East Carolina. Couldn't say enough good things about him. Wouldn't mind being reunited with him. But I think this is a kid that could crawl into the back half of the first round because he's another kid who's NFL ready. They used him all over the field last year, slot, outside. Ran a whole bunch of different routes. The kid's dedicated, loves football, has great NFL bloodlines. His uncle's Jeff Blake. His dad played in the league. There's not enough good things that you can say about Zay Jones. Those are the kinds of kids that move up boards late in the game. All right, we're up against the break. We will take one here, but on the other side, we'll inch closer to some more information about Clemson Pro Day. We'll get into that in the final hour. And we got some other NFL news to run past you here on the John Murphy Show. Chris Brown along with Donald Jones. It's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown with Donald Jones back on the John Murphy Show. I'm filling in for Murph here on St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody. Hope you're, if you are of Irish heritage, you are enjoying the day. And if you are not of Irish heritage, you are also enjoying the day, which many people do. This is the day to pretend to be Irish there, Donald.
It is. It is the day that you pretend to be Irish. But, you know, here in Buffalo, the fact that a lot of Notre Dame fans are still here.
Yes, and they were out in droves
yesterday
at the tournament. Here, and they were biting their nails.
Yeah,
because Princeton gave them a game. I got to tell you, they were sleepwalking through that thing. I could not believe how slow and methodical. Like Princeton, you expect that because they are kind of traditionally play. They try to slow the tempo down, try to get you back door, get the easy baskets, and you know play somewhere in the upper 50s to low 60s in terms of a final score, and that's where the game was. I don't know why Notre Dame never pushed the tempo ever. Because they're good when they're in transition. And I've seen them do it in the ACC. They get in transition, they can make plays and drain threes and that kind of stuff. And they just played at that tempo. It's like they played Princeton's game and said, okay, we'll play with you this way. And they got lucky. Of the Irish yesterday.
And luck of the Irish. In sports, period, you know, if you get into playing somebody else's game, you're probably going to lose that game. And especially in basketball and especially college basketball, you know, because – you talk about parity, but you have a team like, let's just say, that Princeton-Notre Dame game. You know, Notre Dame can speed it up. They have to because they play in the ACC. You have to be able to speed it up at times. But when you get into playing Princeton's game and they actually slow it down on you and they start to run their plays, it becomes a tight game. And now it can come down to the last play of the game, and it did, and they ended up missing the three-pointer. But, whew.
We'll have an update on some of the tight games here on Friday in first-round action of the NCAA tournament when we give you our sports update at the top of the hour. But for now, we're going to go back to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, because we're talking Bills free agency, the receiver situation, / tight end interest, / everything else. And we'll go to Steve, who's got a couple of questions here about the free agent situation. Steve, what do you got for us? Steve, turn down your radio, sir. What do you got for us?
Yes, sir. Gotcha, Chris.
Yeah.
And the draft, the 10th spot.
I like to see him go for that O.J. Howard. He's just almost got as good a speed as a wide receiver. He's big and he's strong. I think we need an all-world tight end. We haven't had one in years, and I think he'll add to it. Now, the best scenario is to trade down, though. However, if you trade down, you go down within probably 15 to 18 in that range, and if he's still there, you take him, which I doubt he's going to be there. But if not, Zay Jones is there. You grab him. You pick up an extra pick, possibly in the third or fourth round for that. And back to the 10th spot, if that linebacker happens to be there, Foster. Or Reddick, we're not talking about linebackers of the line that much. We're talking about wide receivers and corners all the time. As far as I'm concerned, corners could be shoved off the page. Put them in a back burner. They're a dime a dozen. You get corners all the time, and it's deep this year. Go with where the strength is. Because I'd love to see him get that Foster or get Reddick there at that 10th spot more than anybody. But I figure they may be gone at that time anyway. And then one more thing, as far as free agents, at the update, it showed four signings, and you never mentioned who they were. I don't know if that's an old news or something just happened recently. But I was wondering about that Holmes from Oakland and that Cadet from New Orleans.
Yeah, Cadet, he re-signed with New Orleans. I know that. Mm-hmm. So he's back there. So he's out of the mix. Holmes is still very much in the mix. The Bills are in the mix on that as far as he goes. You know, they presented him with an offer, as was made public inadvertently by the NFLPA.
Right.
And, you know, they're just trying to talk turkey a little bit more to see if they can agree on terms. That's kind of where that is. But I think the most interesting point that he just brought up, Donald, is how the need at linebacker has kind of gone under the radar.
It has. You know, you talk about Foster. You talk about Hassan Reddick, who is really climbing. If there's one guy in this draft that's climbing the draft boards, it's Hassan Reddick, just because of, you know, what he did at the Combine, what he did at the Senior Bowl first. And you saw him at the Senior
Bowl. Yeah, he made a great transition because this was a guy that put his hand on the ground as a defensive end at Temple, had a 10-sack season.
Right.
And played really well, and now they moved him completely off the ball. They not only played him an outside linebacker, they played him at inside linebacker, mm-hmm. and he showed range, instincts, and, you know, it's simple football. The reads aren't complicated there during the week at the Senior Bowl, and I think that needs to be taken into consideration. Kid's got a good head on his shoulders, though, comes across really well. So I think it's a situation where he's another guy that's going to move up and benefited from being at the Senior Bowl.
I think when you look at our linebacker position and you look at the weak side linebacker, which is probably what you're going to need, because Preston's going to be, in the middle. Reggie is going to be at the Sam, the strong side linebacker, because he's not really a guy with range like that. I don't remember him showing that range coming out of college. Plus, he's coming off a knee injury, so you don't even know what to expect from him. Now, Hassan Reddick, a guy who is really climbing the draft boards, but like you said, he played with his hand in the dirt in college, and now they're moving him back to linebacker. The weak side linebacker is a position you need to be able to cover, and he's never done that in college. And now you're talking about coming into this league and covering running backs, covering tight ends that are good in this division.
It's a similar position to the one Jabril Peppers is in.
Right.
What is he in the NFL? And sometimes that can compromise a player's value when there's uncertainty there. We got to take a break. We'll try to get to some calls on the other side, but we're also going to find out a little bit more about what happened on Clemson's Pro Day. Yeah, you got the headliners, Deshaun Watson, Mike Williams. There's some other prospects down there at Clemson that are going to get drafted. How did they do? We'll talk to Will Vandervoort, a Clemson insider, when we come back here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
First, the news here, One Bills Drive. Buffalo matched the offer sheet signed by Ryan Groy from the Los Angeles Rams. The two-year deal will keep the lineman on Buffalo's roster through the 2018 season. The Bills would not have received any compensation had they lost Groy to the Rams. Groy made 7 starts at center last season in place of the injured Eric Wood. 2017 will be Groy's 3rd season in a Bills uniform. NFL news, the Oakland Raiders reportedly trying to pull hometown running back Marshawn Lynch out of retirement. The Raiders just lost Latavius Murray in free agency, signed with the Vikings. Lynch retired from the NFL following the 2015 season. The Bills' former first-round pick will be 31 years old in April. The Giants placed the franchise tag on defensive end Jason Pierre-Paul. News today that New York has successfully agreed to terms on a long-term deal with Pierre-Paul, reportedly a four-year deal with the pass rusher. Giants also signed quarterback from the other New York team, the Giants reaching an agreement with Jets free agent QB Geno Smith. Free agent wide receiver Kamar Aiken visiting with the Indianapolis Colts today. Aiken was a player that the Bills had expressed interest in earlier in the offseason, also scheduled to visit the Seahawks on Monday. The NCAA tournament continues with first-round play today. A couple of good games in the second half right now. Oklahoma State trailing Michigan 70-66 with 7 minutes left in the second half. New Mexico down 3 to Baylor, 47-44 at halftime. Seton Hall and Arkansas in the first half. The Pirates with a two-point lead on the Razorbacks, 29-27. Iona and Oregon just kicking off here in the 2 o'clock hour. And the Buffalo Sabres back on the ice tonight in Anaheim against the Ducks. Buffalo trying to bounce back after their shutout loss last night at the hands of the LA Kings. That's your sports update here on the John Murphy Show. Chris Brown filling in for John Murphy on St. Patrick's Day, along with Donald Jones. And we're talking about a bunch of things here with respect to free agency as it pertains to the Bills receiver, tight end, rumbling interest. What's going on? O.J. Howard, where's he coming off the board in round one? Who's a sleeper they could have? Our previous caller thought Zay Jones was a sleeper. He's not a sleeper anymore. But we are going to go back to the phones before we speak to our Clemson insider, Will Vandervoort, to give us the lowdown on Clemson's pro day, where there's about 12, 14 guys that are probably going to get drafted off of that team. It's insane. And they're just ready to reload again. And we'll talk to him in a few minutes. But first, we want to get Gerald in Springville on the show with us. And Gerald, what do you got for us? You got some tight end prospects you want to talk about.
Ashland University, who had he's 277 and ran a 4.440.
You're talking about Shaheen?
Yeah.
Yeah, small school prospect. And, you know, there's a mixed bag on, you know, where he's going to go.
I figured a later round pickup.
Right.
I like the Western Michigan guy for number one. If he's not there, I think we go with the best safety or quarterback available because, let's face it, it's going to be hard to miss if you're going in the first and second round for a receiver. But I do like the guy from Western Michigan. But when I saw this guy's numbers out of Ashland College, I thought, my God, where's he going to go?
Yeah, and that's the rub because here's what you have. You have a receiver class that's extraordinarily deep. You have a cornerback class that's extraordinarily deep. You have a safety class that's really deep. And there's a couple of positions where you don't usually see a lot of great depth. Safety, that's very deep, and tight end. It's a deep tight end class this year. Just talking to scouts around the league, there's five or six positions that go three, four rounds deep in this draft. They're really saying this can be a landmark draft class. I don't know if they're ready to compare it yet to the 2011 class, which the first round, if you look at those names in 2011, J.J. Watt, bunch of guys, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like each of the first 15 picks, half of them are like Pro Bowlers. The other half are solid starters. Yeah. It's unbelievable. They're talking about this class, not quite like 2011, but pretty darn close in terms of what they think this class is capable of and the depth at certain positions they're saying they haven't seen since the early 2000s. It's really a remarkable group of talent that they're putting together. And I think that hurts a kid, a small school kid like Adam Shaheen, you know, a tight end prospect, small school. He's going to get drafted. But, you know, at a position like tight end where the class is usually thin and he could benefit, I think he gets hurt this year and may not go until early day three.
That's the truth. People, you know, certain positions get hurt because of how deep it is in another position. Like, it's crazy when you watch the draft. Some years, like, you'll see a bunch of offensive linemen come off in the top 10. And it's like now everybody's sliding because, you know, teams might need an offensive lineman and it's deep at offensive line. Like, and you can see that this year with the cornerbacks, with the safeties, with the receivers. You can see one position really start to go and another position that people might be talking about really start to slide in the draft. And like you said, a small school guy can get hurt because of how deep this draft is because – you know, there's always going to be that question of, well, he came from a small school. How good is he really? You know, and once the draft and other positions are so deep, he really gets hurt at that point.
Right. Let's go to Zach in Buffalo. Take one more call here before we talk to our Clemson insider, Will Vandervoort. Zach, what do you got for us?
Hi, Chris. Hi, Donald. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Hey, I listened for the start of the show, and I heard, Chris, you're a St. John fan.
Yeah, sadly, I still root for them. I'm hoping, you know, Mullen's doing a good job of rebuilding the culture there, so it's going to take some time, though, and I don't know if they're ever going to get back, but, you know, old habits die hard, I guess.
I actually I played baseball at St. John's University. So.
See, now that's a good team. The baseball team is usually very good.
Yeah, we won two Big East championships.
There you go.
So, yeah, it was really cool. But, yeah, I was calling about what do you guys think about the free agent receiving class, such as guys like Vincent Jackson, and I know Michael Floyd's been in trouble with the league, but I think they'd be interesting additions. I know, like, just bring him in, like, maybe a 1 or 2 year deal, something cheap, and then bring some young guys in to groom underneath them. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I mean, it's always an option to get a guy that can help you right away, that's a veteran in this league, who's got proven production, you know, like a Vincent Jackson, but I think he's going to be 35.
Yeah, he is.
He's going to be 35.
He is up there.
And he's been – he had a couple of years where staying on the field was tough. I'd worry about the risk there at 35 where the body starts to break down a little bit. That guy's run a lot of routes.
I think he has. If he comes – you know, if he gets signed, it's not going to be till camp. You know, if a guy gets hurt or something like that and we need somebody to fill in, then you'll see a guy like Vincent Jackson then get signed.
All right, time now, though, to talk a little Pro Day and Clemson's Pro Day in particular. A lot of prospects that are going to get drafted that we're working out on the field down there on campus. And joining us now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline is Clemson insider Will Vandervoort, who's going to give us the lowdown on everything that went down on the field yesterday. Will, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you taking some time. How you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. How y'all doing?
We're doing great. So if you had to give us the top three headlines from Clemson Pro Day, what would they be?
Well, the number one headline was Deshaun Watson, I think, really established himself as the first quarterback that's going to be taken in the draft. That would be my first one. Mike Williams proved that he could be a straight line runner, can run past guys. That was obviously the number one question coming out there. And then number three is kind of hard because I don't think anybody else really did anything that just wowed you, okay, other than those two guys. So if I had to say number three headline would be that it was sort of just a hum-hum day from the rest of the participants.
Now, when you talk about Mike Williams being able to run past people, I've read conflicting reports on what his 40 time was. I don't know if you had a stopwatch there. I saw anywhere from 4.49 to 4.58. So can you tell us what most of the scouts down there had?
Yeah, the average, by the way, I just put that up on the website. The average scout, I believe, was 4.53 was the average. I had him at 4.53 as well. And so I thought, I was surprised a little bit. I thought he was going to run a 4.6. So when I saw him get to that 4.5 range, that's where they wanted to see him at. The question was, could he run a 4.5? Most people were thinking he couldn't. So he came in there and ran a 4.53, and I think most of the scouts left pleased with what they saw. And that, you know, he's a little deceiving with his speed. Mike has kept that long stride,
right?
And so when he can run past guys based on his stride, it's not so much his speed as much as his stride. And especially he got behind a lot of defenders a lot in his career. And if you go back and watch, especially his sophomore year at Clemson, or his freshman year, I should say, at Clemson. You know, he would get behind defenders a lot. Now, some of that, too, I think, kind of is his ability to get off the line with his strength. Very physical guy. He can kind of stroke DBs behind to the side and everything and get open that way as well. So, but, you know, he does have a little bit of speed. I mean, granted, it's not blazing speed, but it's good enough, especially at the NFL level, to where I think, you know, yeah, people are going to have to respect what he can do from a speed standpoint.
With respect to Ben Bulwer, I mean, the measurables are the measurables. He's got short arms. We've heard the criticism. You know, he's barely over 6 feet tall. Ran in the 4.8s yesterday, at least from the reports that we've seen. You know, stood basically on everything else beyond that. But you talk to this kid, and it's so hard not to want to root for him. I mean, the kid eats, sleeps, breathes football,
yeah,
is a born leader. Where How do you see him fitting in an NFL environment, just knowing him like you do, translating his skill set and those physical limitations?
I think, you know, especially he's more of an inside backer than he is an outside backer. Now, Ben will say I'm lying because, you know, he loves to do it all. But he's really at his best when he's going downhill, and he can just go get the ball carrier, and he's one of the best at it. He brings a heavy hit, and so I think, you know, at the next level, he's a guy that can, you know, maybe be a middle linebacker, can fill in. You don't want him to be, you don't want him to have to start all the time having to cover a running back out of the backfield or something. That's not his strength, and I know that's a concern for a lot of scouts. But I think he's more of that guy who brings a physical toughness to the game, a downhill runner, you know, really can get in the backfield and cause havoc. He's very strong, stronger than people realize. So, you know, sometimes he's going to have to take on that guard at the second level. How will he handle that? Yeah, I think he'll handle it pretty well. And, you know, I think he's a guy, because of his leadership skills, he can really kind of go into a locker room and can bring guys together and get them to play together. The best story from the national championship game this year was the day of the game. He got the video people to put some pieces together that he found the night before, and he wanted to slice them together, and so he could bring the entire defense in, and they could go over some things just one more time before the game. That's the kind of leadership he is, right. And actually it paid off because a couple of the plays were exactly that he brought in so they could see it again. Alabama ran, and Clemson was able to throw him for a loss in those plays. And so it's just Ben's. That's just something that you can't coach or anything. A guy's got to have that leadership, and that's what he brings to an NFL team.
I spent 10 minutes talking to him at the combine, and I came away from, you know, his little interview session, and I'm like, this guy's going to be a coach in like 10 years. He's going to be a coach somewhere.
I'm telling you, I had a friend like that when I was in college. He played middle linebacker. He was such a leader. But then he was so smart and studied so much film. I used to tell him, like, dude, you're going to be a coach at some point. And he's like, I want to play in the league. And I'm like, I mean, that's all good, but you're going to be a coach at some point. Yeah. I'm just letting you know. But another guy who, you know, played well in the national championship game, he also played in the Senior Bowl. He was the first true junior, right, to play in the Senior Bowl because he graduated earlier. Artavius Scott, how did he do yesterday in the pro day?
Well, one thing he did is he did well with his 40 time. Didn't run as well as he wanted to in the combine, so he came back and ran yesterday. Did well with that, and I think he was pleased there. With his overall workout, though, when it came to route running and things of that nature, you know, he kind of he rounded a couple routes out. He didn't do some things that I know you could just tell by watching Artavis, and I've watched this kid for 3 years, that he was frustrated a little bit. He knew he was making mistakes out there, and I think that got to him a little bit. He dropped one pass, had it bobbled another pass. So he was a little disappointed. He probably won't say that to you, but just watching his body language, he seemed a little disappointed with how he performed yesterday. But, you know, I'll tell you this. You want to talk about how Ben Bollwear is a football player. Artavis Scott is a football player as well. This kid, I mean, he will take on anybody. He's the hardest. Dabo Sweeney said it yesterday. He's the hardest guy he's ever seen to tackle. I mean, you think you're going to bring him down. You think because he's his small build that he's easy to tackle. He is not. I mean, he will lay his shoulder down and smack a guy right back. Sort of that Hines Ward mentality, if you will. He's not afraid to block. He's not afraid to be hit, and he's not afraid to get hit or to lay a hit. And so that's something he'll bring, especially from – early on in his career as a special teams player. He loved to go down and just knock a tar out of somebody when he was covering kicks or punts. Was one of the best tacklers on the team in special teams. So I think he could fit a team, a 53-man roster, doing that at least for a couple of years until he can show what he can do as a wide receiver.
We're talking with Will Vandervoort, Clemson insider, about Clemson's pro day yesterday with about 12, 15, 16 prospects. They probably had some juniors and sophomores that were probably working out too to get the early exposure as well. How long did that thing run, Will? How long did it run yesterday?
It ran a long time. I didn't get out of there after all the interviews and everything. I didn't get out of there until like 1:30, and it started like 9:30 in the morning.
Man.
I think the players checked in actually around 8 o'clock.
Oh,
so it was a long day for them, you know. So So it was a long day for us as writers. Yeah. But so it was even a longer day for them, considering they had to actually do the workouts. All I had to do was sit and watch.
Okay, so now here are guys, you know, in a draft that is considered very deep at cornerback, very deep at safety. You got Cordray Tankersley, the cornerback, and you've got Jadar Johnson, the safety. And I know Tankersley has been knocked for his technique in terms of footwork, being a little grabby when he gets twisted up and doesn't flip his hips smoothly. And then with – so let's start there. How did he look in the drill work?
Plus he ran his 40 you know, with his eyes closed. In
how did he look in the drill work? Because, you know, talking to him at the combine, he knew his technique and his footwork were the things that he had to prove he was improving upon.
He looked better, but to me his hips still looked a little tight. And so that's obviously the number one concern with him, especially when, as you mentioned, he gets turned around. You know, you saw it in the Florida State game. Florida State really, he watched that one game, and that was the only bad game he really had of his entire career. But that one game, they really exploited his weaknesses, where I think he had three pass interference penalties on that in that game called on him.
Yeah.
And it was just a bad day. But the reason for it was because of the things we just talked about. You know, his hips were tight. He was out of position. He was grabbing because he was getting beat, so he's just grabbing guys, which is fine, especially in college football because it's only a 15-yard penalty.
Right.
You know, but obviously showed that there's some concerns. And Tankersley, you know, Cordray, he has some. He, like you said, he knows what his issues are, and he showed some improvement. But I still think, you know, he's a guy that when he gets in to the next level, he's going to have to really work on that technique and. You know, so he can be consistently get on the field. If not, as you know, it only takes a couple times you're burned out there on that island, and that's all the chances you're going to get. So it's going to be important for him to improve that here, not only after he gets into mini camp or whatever, but, you know, throughout the offseason, those things.
And then just with Jadar Johnson, not a ton of time on the field. I mean, he had to wait behind some other safeties before he got his chance this past year. And again, deep safety class, and, you know, he ran in the 4.6s, certainly has had a good vertical, had a good broad jump, but where do you see him fitting in this safety class? Is he pretty much relegated to day three of the draft just based on all the top flight, big name talent that sits in front of him at the position?
I think so. I think he's going to get drafted. I just don't think, you know, you're going to take a chance with him later on in the draft. Because I think he's a guy that will make an NFL roster, and one reason why is because he's so smart. As good as Jayron Kearse and T.J. Green are athletically and all those things physically, they can't hold a candle to how smart Jadar Johnson is to them. I mean, Jadar he doesn't get out of position very rarely. He knows he gets the entire secondary lined up and where they're supposed to be. It's great communication skills. He's a good, smart young man. He won't take risks, and I think sometimes that could be a good thing, as much as sometimes having a guy that will take risks can be a good thing. But being the fact that he won't take the risk and he'll stay where he's coached to be at, and he'll make sure everybody else is doing what they're supposed to do. Clemson's secondary was greatly improved this year, even though they lost all that talent last year with three guys that were drafted last year. Even though they lost those three starters, you couldn't even tell it because they were so much improved in the secondary, and Jadar Johnson was the main reason why. And when scouts turn on that film and watch him and watch how he lined up that secondary and how he stayed in position, how he made plays, and he was always where he needed to be, I think that's going to help him be drafted, and I think ultimately that'll help him make a team.
So there were a lot of guys yesterday who participated, but the number one guy that everybody wants to know about across the league and everybody's talking about is Deshaun Watson. And I know you said at the beginning of this call that he solidified himself as the number one quarterback in this draft class. For me, did he do enough yesterday to silence the critics and what the people in the media and the scouts and everybody are saying are his knocks? Did he do enough to silence that stuff yesterday?
Well, I think you're still going to have the critics out there. You know, just some guys who really just don't know, you know, who he is or watch enough film on him. When I talk about critics, just guys that are just experts, if you will. They're called experts. I think the scouts, though, the guys who are really that you need to pay attention to, and the coaches and the general managers recognize that you know, he, first of all, he had a very good day yesterday. It wasn't a great day, but it was a good day. I think one thing that they came out of that was there's no issue with his velocity. That was a question a lot of them were having after the pro day, after the combine, was, you know, could he throw with good velocity? He showed yesterday he can do that then some. A lot of people don't know this stat, but Deshaun Watson, the last 3 years, led college football, all Power Five conference teams, with 38 touchdown passes, which was of 25 or more yards. That's the most in college football. Shows that he can throw the deep ball and can throw it. He can throw it with some consistency. Now, his problem with Deshaun was his mechanics a little bit, especially this year when overthrowing guys on the deep balls. You know, if he steps into his throws like any quarterback, he can hit anybody, and he has a lot of consistency when he steps into his throws. But for some reason this year, he wasn't doing that as much, and he would overshoot guys a little bit. And so that was a concern, but it looked like Jordan Palmer has really worked that out and made that an area of concentration during their workouts in California. And he looked really good with his deep balls yesterday, and I think the scouts were happy about that. Another thing Palmer showed, and what a lot of critics are worried about, is his ability to play with his back to the defense. He didn't have to do that at Clemson, and they really took Palmer really made a concerted effort to show to the scouts and the coaches and GMs there that he could do these things, and that and he looked good doing it. Of course, it's different when you're doing it in pro day and when you're having to do it with a 265 pound defensive end chasing you. So we'll see how that translates once he gets in the league. But he looked pretty good yesterday. Looks like he's ready. Like he could be a guy that can come in and start building that process and becoming more of a pro style quarterback.
He is Will Vandervoort, senior writer for the Clemson Insider. Will, we're going to cut you loose here, but why don't you just tell our Bills fans, who are heavy into the draft, where they can read more about Clemson's Pro Day on your site there?
Yeah, they can go to theclemsoninsider.com. That's our website. It's a free website, so anybody can come and read the stories there. They can also find us on Twitter at Clemson Insider, or on Facebook at the Clemson Insider. So those are all ways you can find us, and we'll love to have them come over and check us out. We talk about Sammy Watkins and those guys and Zach Lawson all the time, so they can read about even some Bill stuff going on there at our website.
All right, very good, Will. Listen, thanks very much for the time. Maybe we'll catch up with you once or twice more before we get to draft day, but we appreciate you giving us an eyewitness account of what went on in Pro Day yesterday.
All right, guys. We'll talk to y'all later. Thanks
all
for
right.
having
That's
me.
That's Will Vandervoort, senior writer at Clemson Insider on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. And a lot of those guys, man, they are going to get picked.
They are
coming off the board. But that Jadar Johnson, what he said about him was really interesting. Just the fact, the smarts, being able to run a secondary. He might not come off the board till the fifth or sixth round, but that's a kid that you get in the system. You bring him along, and then if you got a great safety who becomes too expensive, you can't keep him anymore.
Exactly.
You've groomed this kid, and I could see that's a kid getting on the field maybe third year on defensive side of the ball and making something.
And if you're a guy playing the free safety position, being smart is your biggest attribute. I mean, obviously you have to be able to make plays on the ball when you're back deep and, you know, they throw that ball up. You got to be able to make a play, and you got to be rangy so you can get from sideline to sideline. But you have to be able to get guys in the right direction as the free safety. And so for a guy like that, that is huge. You know, he can come in. He's going to play special teams. At some point, he will get his opportunity to play free safety. And if he proves that he can do what he did in college here at the NFL level, he'll be a starter in this league for a long time.
We got to take a break, but we are going to get back to your calls at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us. Now that we've talked about some of those Clemson prospects, we've also talked about what the Bills have addressed in free agency. How has that impacted Buffalo's draft needs as we get closer and closer to April? We'll talk about that on the other side. This is the John Murphy Show. Chris Brown in for John Murphy along with Donald Jones. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown along with Donald Jones filling in for John Murphy here on the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody.
Be safe, be smart later on.
That's right. Down the stretch we come here on the John Murphy Show. And as promised, we said we're going to get back to the phones. You know, we want you to kind of chime in on a lot of what we've been discussing today, whether it's where the draft focus has changed. I mean, that's chiefly what we want to get into now, because you look at where the Bills have addressed their roster in free agency. They got a couple of fullbacks on the roster. They've got a couple of wide receivers on the roster. You know, defensive side, they've added a couple of safeties to the roster. Mm-hmm. Things are happening in pairs here. I don't know what's going on. They added an offensive lineman for some depth in Vlad Dukas. They brought back Jordan Mills. So
brought back Groy.
You know, yeah, and Groy just got locked up, you know, as they matched the, you know, offer sheets. So there are some chief position needs that they've addressed in some fashion, maybe not in totality, but I think it's kind of shifted the focus a little bit. We're curious as to what you guys think in terms of where that focus now lies as they get to April. So let's let Jonathan and Alden tee us off here. Jonathan, you're with us here on the John Murphy Show. Where do you think the Bills' needs lie chiefly based on what they've done in free agency now?
Hey, Josh, I think they should draft. They can stick with wide receiver. I think they might want to pick Corey Davis out of Western Michigan because he's fast and long athletic. So I think they need some athletic wide receivers. So I think either Corey Davis, John Ross, or Mike Williams, just one of the big three wide receivers. But I really like Davis out of Western Michigan.
All right, Jonathan, I appreciate the call. I mean, it's a popular opinion. The part of me wonders, you know, and I'm not going to dispute for a second that you're going to need a guy that's going to be NFL ready that you can put on the field as a rookie, and Corey Davis probably fits that bill better than any of the other receivers in the draft. Not to say that a kid like Zay Jones is an NFL ready. He's just not thought of in the same hierarchy of, you know, how you're breaking down the tiers of the receiver group. I will say, you know, if you're staying there at 10, Corey Davis is on the board. I'm on board. I would take him too. And I guess you can certainly make the argument. Jeremy Butler, Philly Brown, you've addressed the position, but not with maybe the caliber of proven talent that you need to say we've reloaded at our receiver position in this offense.
That's the sentiment I get from just my Twitter feed. You know, everybody.
It's funny the sentiments you get on your Twitter feed, isn't it?
You get real sentiment.
You get more than sentiment, actually. You get that and a whole lot more.
Man, but that's what everybody says. Like, you know, what are we doing at the wide receiver position? And so, you know, I think it's yet to be seen, like, what they're going to do. But you can see that they're trying to address the wide receiver position through free agency or through the draft or both. I think that even if they were to sign another free agent wide receiver, let's just say a bigger name, we're not talking about a splash name. We're just talking about a bigger name, more established veteran receiver that can come in here, possibly battle for the number two spot. I still would think that they draft one early. They just might not go in the first round.
Right. And here's why. Because you look at the landscape of what NFL free agency has become, and it's turned into literally the haves and the have-nots. The middle class in the NFL is disappearing. You either have guys making giant money, or what we're seeing the Bills do in free agency the last couple of years. A lot of one-year contracts, a lot of veteran minimum deals, a lot of prove-it deals. And then if a player can get that opportunity and make the most of it, they can make a little bit more. I mean, Lorenzo Alexander is a prime example, even at age 33. But still, we're going to see more of this moving forward. And so I think what the Bills are doing, and this is no insult to the players that they've added, but they're adding value guys, and I think they feel they have to get their top flight talent in the draft, not only to fill a role, but because it's cheap labor. It's a rookie contract. And so that's why everything is pointing to them addressing a primary receiver role with a high draft choice, probably a cornerback role is one that they may be able to wait a little bit on because of the depth of the class and because you have Darby and Seymour who are going to battle for those starting jobs. Darby's probably in pen. Seymour is probably in pencil, you know, right now. Because, hey, if they draft one of these kids in the second round at cornerback,
you're going to battle it.
Could jump on the field and start. I mean, the talent's insane. at that position.
Seymour goes back to the nickel position. I think, you know, when you look at across the league, and I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but the teams that traditionally win, teams that are usually around the playoffs, don't spend the most money in free agency every single year. They build their teams, their rosters, through the draft. And I think when Coach McDermott got here, that's something that he wants to do. He wants to be able to build his roster out through the draft. Free agency, he can plug some holes in, but he's not looking to break the bank, you know. And I think that's something that we're going to see moving forward. You're going to see a lot of shorter deals, prove-it deals, bring guys in here in that second tier of free agency where you don't have to break the bank to get these guys, but you're still going to get good production on the field. I think it's a good way to go because I feel like you do build, and you talk about teams that make it to the playoffs every year, that comes through the draft. It doesn't come through trying to bring in all of these big-name free agents, you know. So I think, you know, the fans in Buffalo have really gotten used to the big splash names in free agency. And I don't know if you're going to see that moving forward under Sean McDermott.
Well, here's the thing. It's not just Buffalo.
Right.
I mean, there's other NFL clubs. I got to say, like, I mean, I've covered free agency almost since it started in 1993. And I have never seen the amount of one-year deals that I saw last year. Mm-hmm. Not just here in Buffalo, but across the league. And it's even more widespread now. One-year deal, here you go. You want to come play or not?
Right.
And some guys do it because they believe I am worth more and I'm going to have a monster year this year and right. cash in next year. Other guys are just like, I just want the opportunity. Mm-hmm. I just want to get on I want to get in a camp and show I deserve to be on this roster, and then whatever happens after that, I'll figure it out next year. But it's interesting the approach that the vast majority of NFL teams are taking now, because some have a tricky cap situation. They want shorter-term deals so they don't get trapped in bad contracts. Some other teams want to do that because it's a easy way to fill your numbers on your roster without crippling your cap long-term. And you still have other teams that aren't like a player's talent, might not be sure about them off the field.
Right.
And so they say, all right, well, we'll commit to you this year. You show us you can kind of keep your nose clean, and then we'll talk next year about doing something for 2 or 3 years.
Right.
So it's an avenue that a lot of teams are taking now because it's got a lot of benefits to your cap, to the strength of your roster, to the long-term health of your cap, to the long-term health of your roster.
Yeah. And for me, you know, even looking from the player's perspective, it's smarter for me for a player to say, you know what, I'll do a 2 or 3 year deal and I go and ball out and I can hit free agency again and do another 2 or 3 year deal. Well, I'm just getting the big cash up front, because we see these big 5 and 6 year fluff deals, you know, $60 million. And when you really read the contract, you know, not even half of that contract you're going to end up making. You're going to end up receiving. So for the players, because the teams are doing this now, the teams are going to start going with shorter contracts. The players have to understand, even if I'm one of these big-name players, you know what? I'll do a 2-year deal, get a big signing bonus.
Yeah, give me a lot of guaranteed money.
Give me a lot of guaranteed money, and then in 2 years we can do this again. Give me another lot of guaranteed. I mean, that's –
And there is a benefit for the players there too, because if they're holding up their end and they're producing,
right.
you know, they're on the field every week, you know, knowing the cap's going up $10 to $12 million every year, in 2 years you're going to want a new contract
exactly.
because the market value is going to jump. I mean, look at what happened at cornerback alone in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
After Josh Norman gets his tag rescinded, the going rate was $12.5 million for a top-five cornerback. Josh Norman gets $15 million a year from Washington, turned the cornerback market on its ear in one offseason. So there are benefits to the players, too, if you take that 1 or 2 year deal. Because if some other guy at your position signs some ginormous contract
right. –
you're going to benefit next year if you do the right things on the field that coming season.
Yeah, it's like the basketball philosophy. You know, you look at LeBron and these guys that were like, you know what, I'm not going to sign a long-term deal because I know in a couple years the salary cap is about to blow wide open because we got this new CBA and a new TV deal and all that stuff. And so now these guys are going to go from making $20 to $23 million in a max contract per year to making $50 million per year, you know. And so they just did a short-term deal. You look here in the NFL, you look at a guy like Alshon Jeffrey. Now, he's going to make like $14 million guaranteed this year, $14 million from the Eagles. I believe it's all coming to him. It's a straight like one-year $14 million deal. Next year, he'll hit free agency again. And if he proves it this year, you know, he's going to get paid again next year, you know, and it might be another short deal. Or he might just say, now a team might say, you know, we're going to go ahead and give you a five-year deal or something like that. But it just, for me, it benefits the players to go ahead and do a short two-year deal. It makes it a lot more friendly for the team so that they can help bring talent around you so that your team can win. And then in 2 years, boom, let's do it again.
And the agents like it because it's another 3% or
exactly.
Well, or 1.5% or 2% because they're getting less than 3 now in some cases.
Right.
So they don't mind doing more deals. They'll take volume if they can't get, you know, the quantity or the quality.
We keep getting cash up front. I'm getting 3% of this big cash up front. I'll keep doing that then to take, you know, take 3% of a deal that you're not even going to end up making all of it.
Yeah. Jim in Jamestown, hang on. We've got to take a quick break before we come back for our final segment of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. I got a fun little discussion I need to have with Donald Jones about trying to pull a roster number away from a teammate. There's a new free agent signee who's trying to do that with the number one receiver on his new club. We'll tell you who that is and whose number he's trying to take and what it might take to do it. Coming up on the other side, it's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
One more segment to go. Chris Brown in for John Murphy here on St. Patrick's Day, joined by Donald Jones. Usually sits in that chair. I will be back here on Monday with you again. So we'll do a reset at the beginning of the week, and we'll see if anything's changed here at One Bills Drive.
Maybe we'll have some excitement over the weekend.
That would be nice. Yeah, that would be nice. But we will get back to the phones here at 803-0550, and we'll kick it off here in this final segment with Jim in Jamestown. I was going to go James in Jamestown. That would have been very redundant.
Jay in Jamestown.
But Jim in Jamestown, what do you got for us, sir? Jim, are you there? Turn your radio down, my friend. Go ahead,
hey,
sir.
I was wondering, do you think the Bills will draft? You think the Bills will draft up to get that quarterback from Clemson?
The quarterback?
I'm not convinced they trade up to get him. I don't see them trading up.
I don't see them.
They don't have the ammo to do it. They
right.
only have
six
picks. So, you'd have to trade a host of players. And,
right. And it doesn't make sense.
Like, no.
You know, he's not somebody that I don't think anybody in this draft is trading up to get him.
No. The only way I could see it happening is if a team like Arizona is in love with him, wants to get ahead of Cleveland. They're at 13, wants to get ahead of Cleveland at 12. Maybe they talk turkey with the Bills at 10 and say, hey, can we get up there?
Right.
And if I'm Doug Whaley and the
– take the call.
Holy cow. Like, what do you want to do?
Right.
What do you want to give me a three?
Give me a three. Or a four because we don't have a four.
You don't have a – but I'll take a three. Give me
a three.
Move up your three spots. Get your quarterback, and I'll move back. Get an extra pick in the third round where I'm probably going to get another starter. Mm-hmm. All right, I got to talk to you. Jared Cook signs with the Raiders, two-year deal, and now he wants 89 from Amari Cooper. Okay, so – he's apparently always worn 89 since he's been in the NFL. It's his number. Give me the protocol. How is this going down with the number one receiver on the team, who, oh, by the way, is one of the hottest-selling jerseys next to Derek Carr by Oakland Raider fans? How you're going to tick off Raider Nation walking
right.
in the door?
I'm sorry, but I don't think as Amari Cooper that he'll do it. You know, I don't care how much money you throw at me.
Oh, so you don't think that whatever the price is? Because
he
at Alabama? I'm trying to remember his number. He's like 15 or something.
Something like that.
It was a low number.
The price has to get high for him to change that number. I just don't see him doing it. Now, the benefit is that, first of all, he'll get some cash right away. Secondly, everybody who has an Amari Cooper jersey now might then say, you know what, I need to go buy his new jersey.
All you got to do is rip off P-E-R and put a K on it. And then you're covered.
And you're covered.
You don't even have to change the whole name.
You probably see
P-E-R.
That.
P-E-R.
You probably see some Oakland fans do that out there.
A lot of medical tape with some black marker. And
exactly. But I think now that's the only benefit. But, man, Amari Cooper is, you know, he's one of the best receivers in the game today.
I think he ticks off Raider Nation if he changes that. They'll be hot at him. Everybody that bought a Cooper jersey is going to be like, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
That's going to do it for us here on a Friday on the John Murphy Show. Donald and I will be back on Monday. Our thanks to our board op in the Endercom Studios, Ryan Gates, and all of the crew here at One Bills Drive. This is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.